another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Phone number 866-901-ADAM. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla. Good
morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, sir.
Well, a lot of us today. If you guys don't like us, it's time to tune out. Because we had half a guest, and now we're down to zero.
Yeah.
You're calling him half a guest.
We had the guy, Don LaFontaine.
That's right.
He does all the voices for all the movie trailers.
Here, you want Don LaFontaine, you want to know who he is? In a world turned upside down.
Right.
That guy.
That guy, who I would count as half a guest. And the reason I say that's because if he was walking down the street, no kid would stop and go, Daddy, that's Don LaFontaine,
right,
the guy from the movie.
Right, an ICM voiceover agent would stop him.
That's right. That's right, but you wouldn't know him if you weren't in the business, although he does do that Geico commercial.
Right.
The point is he's half a guest, and now he's no part guest. So we'll carry on.
I got to tell you,
yes.
He was... Now, I look up to the guy because, like I was just saying earlier before we started the show, I have an appointment with the throat doctor on Thursday. I'm never pretty, but I usually don't sound like this.
Mm-hmm.
I had full-blown laryngitis like 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm,
and it's just starting to get better. But anyway, the only thing about Fontaine that was good was the idea you had around him.
Yes,
that
well,
was
thank
funny.
You. Thank you, thank you. It's an old joke I came up with some years back on Loveline. Where I think we had a voice guy. I think we had Will Arnett in. Now, Will Arnett, you don't think of as a voice guy.
Is he the guy from Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman?
He's, no. He's the guy from Arrested Development, thank you, who's married to, what's her name from Saturday Night Live, Amy Poehler.
He's the guy from that show, married to that girl from that thing.
Brian, yes. The sound guy really is your external hard drive, as he said yesterday, Adam.
I know. I don't have to tap into it every once in a while, but yeah, Arrested Development, he's done a few movies, married Amy Poehler, you would definitely recognize the guy, he doesn't look anything like a voiceover guy, but he was the voice of GMC or something, and he'd do the, you know, the sort of truck commercial things where it's like, it's not more than you need, it's more than you want, or something like that.
Right.
And I got him to do these VOs at the time. For some reason, there was a show called Hack on the air where the guy drove a cab but solved crime. Evidently, there's no such thing as just solving crime anymore. You have to squeegee windows and solve crime. You got to be a nanny and solve crime. Actually, now with the CSIs, you just solve crime. But back in the day, you did something and solved crime.
Just so you know,
you are none and solved crime.
My wife is up for the part of a voice in a cartoon based on her own band, where she is a rock star by night and a crime solver by day.
Yeah, that's what you did. You had... Here's the thing. Solving crime did not pay the bills in the 70s.
Right.
Evidently, you could not. You could get by, you know, you'd get a little walking around money from Lil Wham, what I call from solving crime. There's a band that I don't want working on crime, by the way. Those two Quimbys. Imagine Wham's on the case.
Careless Whisper by day, solving crime by
night. Okay, but my favorite song lyrics ever are from Wham.
And
guilty
are.
Feet ain't got no rhythm.
I don't want
that's
that.
Bitching.
I don't want those guilty gumshoes on my on my case.
Guilty feet ain't got no rhythm.
Hey, George Michael, my wife's been dead for nearly 11 years now. I haven't seen you leave the park bathroom yet. I'm busy. There's trace evidence in the urinal.
Or some guy named Trace in the urinal.
So. The big joke with the voiceover guy was Hack, and the idea was I grew up in the 70s watching those shows where they'd say, you know, in order to catch a murderer, so and so is going to have to become a murderer, and we just thought it'd be funny if it always ended up with rapists, so it would sound like this week on Hack, in order to catch a jewel thief, Hack is going to have to become a rapist. It always ends with a rapist. And it would get farther and farther. Well, you know, there's an international ring of donkey smugglers. And in order to infiltrate them, Hack is going to have to become a rapist. It always ends.
You
really likes rape.
You're killing one of my few rules in life that I actually have over my wife, because she kind of runs the show.
Mm-hmm.
When we started doing Breaking Bonaducci, all of a sudden she was doing television interviews. Like, out of nowhere, she went from just, like, taking care of the kids and doing whatever it is she does,
mm-hmm,
to sitting with me and Oprah Winfrey talking about our lives, like, mm-hmm, overnight.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she decided she was witty, which can throw you.
Yeah.
And she said something. I forget what it was. And I said, there's three things that are never funny. Rape, AIDS, and kids with cancer.
Oh, I see. No, that was...
And yes, then you went and made rape funny.
Well, thank
and
you.
And killed me. I hope she's still asleep.
Wait till you hear his kids with cancer material.
I'll get to what Hank is... in order to bust illegal music downloaders, Hack is going to have to become a rapist. See, it always ends with rape.
Yeah.
I was dying for Don LaFontaine to do that, although he could have been one of these guys that didn't play along.
He's a real serious cat. Real serious.
Well, I would be if I was him, too, because he's constantly talking about the world ending and the Earth, having a few more days left in it.
Although he is also the voice of Cartoon Network. But
oh,
the world's
he?
Always ending on Cartoon Network, too. It's just the Powerpuff Girls have to save it.
But, Danny, you just glossed over the fact that you were on Oprah.
Yes.
I've been on Oprah four times.
Really? Yeah. How did you find Miss Oprah?
You just commit a major felony and be an ex-child star. Boom, you're on.
Well, how did you get to Chicago, but how did you find her as a personality? I'm guessing you're asking that, Teresa.
Thank you.
I thought she was very nice, but I mean, you got to understand, I have not done Oprah as a successful human being. I've done Dr. Phil as a successful human being. I've done, every time I was on Oprah, if you remember in the very early 90s, most of the crimes committed in California were committed by the cast of Different Strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, all of us just went...
It wasn't most, but it was in the high 40s.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and there was me, and there was, Eddie Munster or whatever. And we used to go on all those talk shows and sit in, and they would all talk about how show business drove them insane and drove them to drugs and drove them to ruin. Mm-hmm. And I would say, not me. I don't remember getting high with any of you guys. I got high with my neighbor, and he didn't have a TV show. And then I said this line that my wife now hates, but I'm often asked to repeat, and that is, when I went to rehab, I was the only ex-child star there.
I do love this line. I have seen or heard you say this line on television a time or two, and you ought to just take a moment and repeat it verbatim, because I do think it was an interesting example.
What if you're wrong? What if it's not the line you think of? Now I feel like an ass.
No, it's the same one.
It's okay. Oprah would say, do you feel that your troubles stem from being an ex-child star? And I would say, when I went to rehab, I was the only ex-child star there. But there were 9 dentists.
That's
and nobody
right.
asked them if their problems started from being an ex-child dentist.
I like that.
Thank you, Adam.
This week, by the way, on Hack, in order to catch a child star criminal, Hack is going to have to become... a dentist. Twist. And then rape. Once he administers the ether.
Right. Ether. Often common use thing.
Yes.
You never did any ether, did you?
You know what? If somebody had whatever it was, I did it.
I inhaled some Quick Start once because it had ether in it. It's the stuff you spray into a carburetor to get a car started back in the day. And we were driving to Palm Springs with a friend of mine. And he said, hey, man, if you inhale this stuff, you get a nice buzz. And we ironically were using Quick Start in a car that was going 80 miles an hour. But we're using it on our cabezas, not on the carburetor.
See, you and I could not be more different. To me, a carburetor is the hole in the back of the bong. And you let your thumb off it, and all the smoke goes up real fast.
Wow.
That's a carburetor.
Stoner or wrencher.
Yeah.
That's how you know.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully my kids will grow up in a world where they know a carburetor is the hole in the back of the bong, because all cars are fuel injected these days.
There are no carburetors.
Nope. All right. We need to take ourselves a little break. When we come back, something I was thinking about, a topic I'd like you to join in on, 866-901-M. When I was watching the Rose Bowl, it's always, when you turn on the TV on New Year's Day, you see the Rose Parade. It's a bunch of lily white, freshly scrubbed people lining a beautiful Pasadena parade route with the stealth fighter flying overhead and the whole Tournament of Roses thing. And then that spills right over to the Rose Bowl. And I realized people sitting around in Michigan, USC was playing Michigan, but all over the country are socked in. They had horrible weather this year. Meanwhile, you're seeing the Goodyear blimp camera shot of the beautiful Rose Bowl and surrounding Pasadena Hills, and it looks 72 degrees, not a cloud in the sky, and spectacular. And if I was anywhere other than here, I would say, honey, not only are we moving to California, we're moving into the Rose Bowl.
Right.
I am going to squat the 50-yard line and claim this land in the name of Spain, and that's where we're moving. We're moving onto the 50-yard line of the Rose Bowl. I would like to deter you people from coming out here.
Well, first of all, this place has already been claimed in the name of Spain, if you know what I'm saying.
Certainly reclaimed. The point is there are many reasons why you shouldn't move out here, why you should brave the winter in Michigan and stay put where you are. I have my own personal reasons and ways to dissuade you. Danny has his, Teresa has hers. I'd like to hear yours. 866-901-ADAM. We'll hear yours, we'll give you ours, and we'll do that after this.
The Adam Carolla Show is going back to the Playboy Mansion for another live broadcast on January 18th. Want to go? Listen to Adam next Monday morning to win tickets. And don't miss the 90-minute premiere of The Apprentice, Los Angeles, Sunday night at 9:30 on NBC. Listen Monday morning, answer a few questions about the episode, and you win tickets. The Apprentice, Los Angeles. New city, new twists. Winners live in a Hollywood Hills mansion. Losers sleep in tents in the backyard. Let's get back to Adam, Teresa, and Danny on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, we were talking about how beautiful it was yesterday, or I should say the day before, over at the Rose Bowl, and how people watching across the country would be compelled to move out here, seeing the beautiful Pasadena area all adorned in its seeds and rose petals, and then the Rose Bowl, of course. We want to give you some reasons not to move out to Southern California, because I've lived here my whole life, and there are many reasons why you shouldn't move out here. I know when you have a TV and that's all you see, it seems great, but for one thing you don't know from watching the TV is most people here no longer speak English.
Right.
Now, it's mostly Spanish, but there are 128 other languages the DMV pamphlet is printed up in, and your chances of running in to somebody who speaks English, if you need to use a bathroom, if you need directions, if you just misdial.
Right.
You want to know when it's time to move? Go to the new town you're in, pick up the phone, call your best friend, but don't dial their number. Dial one off of their number and see how thick the accent is of the person that picks up the phone.
Interesting.
You missed it. That means it's time to move. You misdial in Los Angeles, you don't get, hi, it's Bob Johnson. Who's this? Hey, what can I do you for, son? I'm sorry. I think you have the wrong number. Then you get that really nervous one.
They act like you're robbing them. It's just the wrong number.
I've worked, even the right number seems like you got the wrong number. I've worked with Latinos my entire life in the construction business, and once in a while I got to make that phone call, and because they all live together, Roberto's mom answers the phone.
Right.
And it's like, hello? Hi, is Roberto there? Well, first off, I don't know if who is a great answer when I'm talking about your son, right. And I just said his name. Roberto? Who? Roberto? No! No, he's not here! I really picture her being taped up and a guy holding a gun underneath her young son's chin going, listen, old lady, you say a peep about your son over this phone, and the kid gets it.
The other thing is, though, that I think, and I hope this isn't any kind of bad thing to say, but it seems that all the Mexicans that wanted to come here have come here. Because I used to not say Latino or Hispanic. I used to say Mexican. Mm-hmm. Because that's all I knew was Mexicans. Mm-hmm. They were friends, and I knew them, and that was that. But now you have to, because I don't really know any Mexicans anymore. I know a Honduran.
Yes.
And I know a guy from Uruguay.
You're going to know Nicaraguan a little bit later today when Ozzy stops painting my house and comes in here to do his movie review. Not only Spanish, Mexican, whatever, wherever, Latin America, wherever you're from, but we have Koreatown. Well, here's one. We live, Los Angeles is a Koreatown, has a little Ethiopia, no little Italy. A little everything, right. But no goddamn Little Italy in this town. That is a very
right there.
That's a very bad sign for a town. No Little Italy. But anyway, your chances of finding somebody who speaks some English when you break down on the side of the road and you need a question answered is slim to none.
Slim to none.
In this town.
Including, by the way, gringos who just don't dig you. We'll
yes.
Pretend that we don't speak English.
The other thing, too, is this place is made up of either Mexicans or the head a-holes from every city across this country. The guy who is out in Dearborn, Michigan, who says, I'm going to make it as a star, that's the a-hole. Not the family man, not the salt of the earth guy, not the guy who played on the football team with you and now you guys work at the same hardware store. Not that guy. Not that guy. The a-hole. The head a-hole and head cheerleader from every part in every city around this country ends up here. And they're disappointed because they didn't get the gig they wanted. They thought they were going to star next to Dr. McDreamy in Grey's Anatomy. Instead, they're starring over at the Denny's.
Right.
They got a puss on because they didn't come here to warm up my coffee.
Now they're McBartender.
They're McBartender. They're McWaiter. And,
and they're also giving birth to McDisappointment.
That's right.
Because given they breed and then have another person to be disappointed that they don't make it.
Giving the Ace Man the McStink Eye when he wants a warm-up on the Joe.
Well, that's a good reason not to move here in and of itself because there are a lot of beautiful people here. And then if you were, you know, a 7 wherever you came from, you immediately drop down to a 5 when you get to LA.
The other thing, though, is we pay a ton of taxes and we get almost no bang for our buck.
Right.
We have no public transportation to speak of. We have gridlock traffic. The air is dirty. And as I found out a few months back, we came in number 48 out of the 50 states, that is California, in terms of scholastic achievement. Yeah. We are the dumbest. 48. 48.
Where'd Hawaii come in?
Above us.
Yeah. Them and them big calves, and they still kicked our ass.
Guys, there's students in Hawaii who use, by the way, flaming pencils.
Right.
They use them. Oh, they spin them.
While eating spam sushi.
They have a number 2 pencil that's 3 foot long, a guy hitting a conga drum, and they actually take SATs with flaming pencils, and they're still doing better than us.
Yeah.
And you make fun of the Mississippis and the Arkansas. Oh, they're 22 and 23.
Yeah.
I mean, they're way the hell ahead of us.
You don't have to have all your teeth to come in, like, in the top 50. You know, that's it. There's only 50 states. So at 48, we're easy to beat by a guy with one tooth right in the front.
Oh, it is so goddamn pathetic that we're that low. And yet nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah, fantastic. So we get if you come here, you pretty much have to. You have to send your kid to a private school. You can't send him to a regular public school. There are maybe a couple of spots here and there if you live in Beverly Hills.
I send both my kids to a public school in a really dicey neighborhood.
Because you want them to...
No, because I don't care about
them. Oh, you're cheap. Yeah. My folks are saying,
why? It's not that interested in their welfare.
It builds character.
No, just because it's there and they liked it.
It's also nice when you're traveling down the 101 freeway in gridlock. You're going 9 miles an hour, and you get to look up at the freeway signs that have the graffiti and the barbed wire around them. That is... I would argue, if I was in the city council, there's nothing more demoralizing for the citizenship of a city to drive around and see freeway signs that have that circular Constantine wire, that razor wire around it. First off, it looks like goddamn Abu Ghraib in here. Do you know what it does to your fragile psyche as you drive down the 101 and look at barbed wire around your freeway signs? It's like... If you're making a movie, if you're making Escape from New York and you have this apocalyptic, it's the year's 2045 and Los Angeles has been turned into a penal colony.
Snake Plissken is on the way to save the day.
Plissken's got his eye patch on and his shotgun and he's going to save the day and his leather pants. Even those people wouldn't put barbed wire around a goddamn freeway sign. It is goddamn depressing to see that.
I'm with you on that, because what that does in some way, and I don't know how until you actually vocalized it, that it affects me it impedes my freedom in some way. I don't know exactly how. I live in a state where they can't protect, even with razor wire, a street sign, yet they'll give it a try.
Well, yes. my very own home gets tagged because I live right in gangland, and I woke up on Christmas Day to find that on Christmas Eve, the gangs had a little warfare on my retaining wall, and it was covered in
four
different colors.
Hold on, good name for Teresa's vagina. My retaining wall.
See, I bet she was going to say they had a gang on her retainer. I was going to say, well, you should take it out first.
Well, there's one gang, and they write B-U-D-S. They're called Beat You Down Crew. That doesn't sound good.
No. It's bumpy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that limerick kind of.
Doesn't flow. Yeah, it's not like, you know, if you're going to do one of those acronyms or whatever they're called, you should do like GLAD, you know, right. Or MAD or, you know, one of the Mothers Against, right? You know, right. So it has some flow. Beat You Down. Yeah. Back to the freeway signs. Look, I believe that your mind is fragile and picks up much more than you know. I mean, you think you're having a conversation, but you're aware of what's going on in your environment. I mean, what I'm saying is when you're driving your car, you're looking at the speedometer, you're looking at the road, but believe me, you see the trash that's mm-hmm. piled up Absolutely. On the side. You see the weeds that have poked through. You see the graffiti on the overpass that's been tagged, and it all adds up. Look, it's why you don't want to live across the street from a prison as opposed to staring at the Pacific Ocean off of Malibu Bluff. You stare at the ocean. You don't swim in the ocean. I mean, you wake up every morning and you look out the window and you pay $10 million so you can see the ocean. Right. You don't go down and go freediving in the ocean.
My whole life, I've been in that ocean three times.
Right.
And hated it every time.
The same thing. If you lived next to a prison, you wouldn't be in the prison. You'd be staring at a prison and you'd be depressed.
Right. I'm with you.
Well, when you take razor wire and you wrap every goddamn freeway sign and then every other overpass is tagged and there's garbage everywhere, and then there's a fence up around every place,
around everything.
And there's a camera up in every intersection. Well, it starts to feel a little bit like living in a prison.
Yeah, it's depressing.
And you don't want that. I gotta say, I passed one on the 101, and I saw, I think I woke up, I don't know, maybe it was Christmas or a couple days after that, I was driving with a friend of mine down the 101. And I woke up?
You probably should have been awake already.
You know what? I don't need to be awake to navigate my driveway okay, or right. the street leading my house. I do that in my sleep. Point is I'm driving down the freeway, and I see a sign, the freeway sign, big green freeway sign. This thing been tagged all to hell. And I was kind of far away, but I could tell that it had been tagged. And I said to my buddy, geez, I thought we put barbed wire around all those things. And as we pulled up and got closer to it, I could see it did have barbed wire on it. That was not enough to dissuade the young folks that decided it would be a good idea to tag it.
Yeah, the Beat You Down homies or whoever they were.
Beat You Down crew.
I feel like, and we're shifting gears here, but I hear a PSA for, you know, secondhand smoke, and I hear PSAs about wearing your seatbelt. How about we do something with all the crazy tagging that goes on in this city? Is it ever addressed? Does it ever get brought up? Is anyone trying to do anything about it? Or does it turn into a racial issue, and thus it is kept away from like a political hot potato?
Anything that turns into a racial issue is kept away like a hot potato. I think they should lower the standards for the death penalty.
Is a great tagging.
Way. Yeah, and also the amount of time. When I hear a guy's been on death row for 14 years.
Right.
You know, that's more. If he committed the crime when he was 40, he's now 54 years old and he's still appealing.
Oh, it keeps going. And I guarantee probably 5 or 6 members of the victim's extended family have died since the guy was on death row.
Natural causes.
That's right. He had a nephew that died in a car crash. He had a grandfather that died of natural causes. Right. But whatever it is, I'll bet you, on average, when you take the extended family and the extended, this would be a lovely study to do. The average time spent on death row is probably 12, 13 years. And how many of the extended family members of the victim died in that time period?
Natural or unnatural causes.
Just perished in the time that you sat there waiting to perish.
Well, though, for the taggers, then what I would like for me, because I hate them. Hate them. They ruin beautiful, otherwise lovely old neighborhoods. They turn them into a ghetto with a can of spray paint.
Right.
I think there should be a deputized squad, say us, and we should just be allowed to shoot them.
I agree.
I think we should just be able, he's got a can of spray paint, he's writing something that isn't the spray painting of the color.
I do want to respect.
And we just shoot them.
I want to respectfully say, though, if any of the members of the PUD crew are listening.
Buds.
Buds are listening. That's Bonaducci speaking.
Yeah, because they work in pairs and they're very young. Tagging crews are like mini gang members. They're not gang members yet. They're like 13, 14. And one of them, they were two of them tagging my wall, and I went down there. I don't know why I did this. What was I going to do? But I said, excuse me.
Could have been the Jamesons talking, by the way.
No, I was sober. And one of them made a little sign.
Who's talking now, Teresa?
It's me.
Okay. I just don't know. I never know with you.
I don't know anymore. That was one time.
Okay.
And he made a sign, like, you know, like a gun motion to his head, pointed to his head with a gun, and then pointed to my head, like, I'm going to shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cops, when they came, told me that oftentimes taggers work in pairs. One stands across the street. So if you approach the tagger while he's tagging, the other one can shoot you. So I don't recommend it.
I was thinking this is really bad, because what it looked like he was saying is right after he shoots himself in the
I'm
head.
I'm coming after you.
He thinks he's going to kill you.
Yeah, not, well, it would be nice.
Yeah.
I got to say, too, the cops aren't real comforting either, because the cops are always like, hey, man, if you see something like that, don't get involved. Don't do anything.
That's what they said.
Right. But if any of you cops are listening, we would like you to get involved with stopping the graffiti. Right. Don't take your own advice. I think sometimes cops spend their whole day telling people, hey, man, if a guy pulls a gun, don't do anything stupid. Just comply with his wishes. Or if you come home and there's someone in your house, you get out. Do not jump. If a guy's tagging, whatever.
Money.
Right. Listen. That's us. You guys get involved and start shooting people. You shoot people. We'll not get involved. We'll be applauding. Well, we'll be not getting involved while you're shooting them. Greg?
Hey, Adam. What's going on?
What's happening, my brother?
It's amazing that you're talking about this morning, getting gas at AM/PM. I'm fumbling. I got a coffee, all my stuff in my hand, trying to get out the door. And a guy stands there about 4 feet from the door and watches me fumble around trying to open this door. And I'm like, man, it's like I gotta throw my coffee at the guy's face and say, you know, think you can help me out here, bud?
Well,
the other day, opened the door for an elderly woman, and she looked at me like I was gonna mug her or something.
Well,
I was like completely appalled. That's another
situation we have here where everybody's from a different town. No one claims this as their hometown. This is a rental car. We're all driving like Bonaducci, late for a gig. I mean, this isn't our hometown. Everybody I know, well, they do. You can always tell. Now, Danny, you're not a big sports guy, and you probably don't know tons of sports guys. But if you know, I know tons of sports guys, and you never realize how much they don't feel a part of this town until football season starts. And there's 18 of us sitting over at Kimmel's house watching the game. And this dude's from New York, so he's a Giants fan. And that dude's from Brooklyn, so he's a Jets fan. And this guy's from Pittsburgh. This guy's from New England. These guys are all Pats fans. These guys are from Arizona. There are 18 guys sitting in a room who all live in Los Angeles, in Southern California, and not a one of them is from here, and not a one of them gives a good rat's ass what goes on here. They all pine for their hometown.
Right.
Ironically, all you a-holes have been here twice as long as you've been at your old place. A lot of you left for college at 17 or 18 and never returned. Many of you moved with your families at 8 or 9 years old. You're now in your early 40s and still consider yourself, you know, native New Yorkers, native whatever. You champion those places. You hold them up on a pedestal. You don't give a rat's ass about the place you've been living and, ironically, are raising your family.
Right. Now, I have a question, though, because I don't really follow the sports thing. So if you've got a guy from Michigan and a guy from New England and all that going on, if nobody's actually rooting for the teams, why are there 18 people at Kimmel's house? Does he just serve good food?
When he fires up his pizza oven. But he has the satellite feed.
Right.
There are, you know, 9 different games going on at any given time. And Cousin Sal is rooting for the Cowboys. And Dave Damashek is rooting for the Steelers. And Kevin Hench is rooting for New England. And Bill Simmons, the ESPN sports guy, is rooting for the whatever. Seattle. Everybody, everywhere, is rooting for the team where they're from.
And you can get them all on the satellite. All right.
We get them all on the satellite. Yes, indeed.
Blow my brains out.
I wouldn't pay for it myself, but I would definitely go over to Kimmel's and enjoy it on his dime. Let's see.
I'd go to Kimmel's and eat his food.
Yeah, well, come on by Sunday.
Just pretend and just go team. But I don't know exactly. It's obvious that I'm a grown man that doesn't know the rules, and I would like cheer at the wrong time and
get
another free throw, and it's a football game.
It might
game.
Be a little awkward. I might wait a few weeks to go to Kimmel's.
Yeah.
Maybe just a few.
Why? Do you have to warm up to me?
Not him so much.
There might be some tension over tension. There. Maybe a little. I don't know.
Between me and Kimmel? Okay.
No. Maybe between you and our former sports guy.
I think he knows his business is business.
Awkward. Let's talk awkward. Awkward. Let's take a call.
All right.
Bummer, because he's in my karaoke song.
Dave Damashek's on line 5. Dave? No. Darius?
Hey, good morning, Ace Man.
What's happening, Darius?
How you doing, brother?
Good.
First off, I have to say, Danny, you know, I was a little skeptical, but, you know, I'm a fan. It seems like it's going to work. And when I hear you, I don't know what it says about him, but when I hear you, I hear my brother-in-law, brother.
Wow.
And I'm going to be a fan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the support, man.
All right, brother. Well, it's SoCal born and bred. I went to, funny that you mentioned Michigan and the Rose Bowl, but I went to Ohio State for school, and now I'm living in Seattle. I went back down there for the holidays, and I got to say, man, I forgot about the traffic.
Yeah.
The traffic. Oh, God, it's ridiculous, man. I mean, 2:00 PM on the 60 freeway, and it's gridlock?
Yeah.
That would turn me away.
I'll tell you, and you know, you can tell, ironically, when I did a little traveling. I don't know if it was New Year's Day or it was Christmas Day, but there was no traffic. And that's when you realize, hey, these freeways actually work when there's nobody on them.
The Olympics.
Yes.
Remember that? The LA Olympics?
Yes. There are 2 days out of the calendar year where there's no traffic in LA. And I made it from my place to Kimmel's Beach House in like 18 minutes. You could make it to the airport in 15 minutes. That's if there's no traffic. That's 2 days.
Everything according to MapQuest is 17 miles from my house. Everything of interest is about 17 miles from my house. But MapQuest goes by the posted speed limit. Then somebody called me up and they wanted me to do something
very depressing.
Fox on Bundy and something. And I said, I can't. That's an hour each way. And the lady from New York said, no, I MapQuest it.
Yes.
It's 17 miles and it's 22 minutes.
Yes, Pollyanna said, no, is running that goddamn MapQuest. Because that's what happened when we went to the City of Industry some weeks back to do a live show over Camacho's. MapQuest says, well, it's 17 miles from Bonaducci's house. That's what mine does. You're 4.5 miles from Bonaducci's house. Thus, it is 21.5 miles. That's how my MapQuest works.
As well it should.
That's how all MapQuest works. 17 miles from Bonaducci, and then they calculate how far you from Bonaducci's house. That's how you come up with your whole number. And so it was like, well, it is City of Industry from my house door to door to Camacho's is 21 miles. At 65 miles an hour, it's going to take you 19 minutes to get there. Not at 5:30 on a Thursday.
Nope.
Not tell you hop on the 5, get the 101 to the 110 to the 5 to the 60 to the 601. Go to the Slauson cutoff. Cut off your Slauson. little Tonight Show comedy there.
And is that what that is?
Then it's off to Camacho's. No, of course it wasn't 18 minutes. Tell it to half the staff that left from here and showed up a half hour late, and they left an hour and a half before the gig started.
Since you were using the parade as a reason for people to think to come here, now those are motorized vehicles in pace with people walking carrying giant brass instruments.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a parade. That's Tuesday.
That's how
fast things move here constantly.
You
could be in the diamond lane. That's the carpool lane to most of you people. And there could be a guy walking with a tuba going as fast as you.
I had a whole flock of guys with French horns pass me up on the way to work
drives
today.
Me crazy.
And the guy playing the zither or whatever the hell. What's the hell, the one that seems like the Vibes or the xylophone, but it's big and round? It would seem like one that wouldn't leave the music room, but yet they strap it to some poor schmuck and he does the...
What
the hell's that? It's got the weirdest name one. It's like a xylophone vibe. It's got a weird zither name to it. Anyway, T.
Yes.
Those are just some reasons why you folks shouldn't move out to Southern California. T, what's coming up in the news, baby doll?
Well, have you heard of ghost riding?
Yes.
We're going to talk about that because it's become very controversial. And also, what gorgeous, rich, famous woman is complaining about her fame? And who is Anna Nicole Smith's baby daddy?
All right. All okay. that. Okay. All that. And much, much more on The Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, if you're a hot young piece of cooch and you're ready to get jacked up, hit me up at myspace.com/silverisgold. Ozzy's going to review Rocky Balboa. We'll play a little Mr. Brightside and bust out the chloroseptic. Danny Bonaducci's going to sing. Hey, the kids love music. Should be hot. Late.
Thanks, Jack. Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci on The Adam Carolla Show.
Glockenspiel. Glockenspiel.
Now, I took umbrage with Glockenspiel because I said it was not a musical instrument you carried. It was a giant German clock with moving parts.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's that, too, or who
knows? How can it be both those things? I mean, you looked it up, so I'm assuming your answer is correct.
You know, yeah, I know. As soon as I heard Glockenspiel, I knew that's what I was looking for. I knew, well, I said it was a weird thing that looks like the vibes or the xylophone, and it had a weird name to it. That is the weirdest of all the marching band items. But we'll find out if it's a German clock.
With those old people, like it's a small world people. They kind of come out and they bang a drum as the clock strikes 12 and they go around. They're like little wooden puppets. That's a Glockenspiel, I thought.
Well, maybe. You know, the other thing is you realize we have words that are almost the same. You know, I mean, in our language, we have your micros and your macros.
Right, sure.
And we have your intro and your intras and your things. I mean, we have words that sound pretty close. Maybe they have a Glockenspiel.
Maybe.
And that's
right.
What that is. We'll get to the bottom of it.
Either
Don't
way,
you worry, Bonaducci. You'll sleep
nervous.
Like a baby tonight.
If we're going to get to the bottom of the English language, I want to know why the nothing that has an F sound at the end is actually spelled with a G-H. I want to know what that's all about. That bothers me like crazy.
English, yeah. Motherfucker, do you speak it?
It's no wonder I can't spell T.
Yes.
I can spell news. That's what I can spell. Yeah.
As you may know, Oprah Winfrey built a $40 million school in South Africa. It's called the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls. She's opening it up this week. And a lot of big stars out there, Tina Turner, Mary J. Blige, Mariah Carey, Sidney Poitier, Chris Tucker, and, of course, director Spike
Chris
Lee.
Chris Tucker.
I know. A little out of place there. Here's Oprah talking a little bit about her new school in South Africa.
Education has been the most vital aspect of my life. It has been the thing that made all the difference for me because it allowed me to not feel oppressed or... It allowed me not to feel that because of my race or because of my gender, I was less than anybody else. So I wanted to give this opportunity to girls who were like me.
I feel like there's like 128 Oprahs that are out there. I feel it's like when you found out there was more than one Goodyear blimp. Like we're like, well, the baby's flying over the Rose Bowl and it's flying over the Michigan State. Right. Oh, wait a minute. There's more than one. There must be more than one Oprah at this point.
You mean like Gallagher?
Yes.
Oh, that's just sad.
But not as
just
bad.
Like Gallagher.
Yes, I feel like...
Gallagher just opened up a school in Africa, too.
I turn on...
There's no food for them to smash.
I turn on the TV, and there's Oprah traveling cross-country with her buddy Gail, and then I switch the channel, and there she is sitting down with former President Clinton, and then I switch the channel, and she's in South Africa opening a school she built herself. Laid every tile and set every brick.
Right.
And interviewed every family personally of all 155 schoolgirls. She wanted to meet the families.
That's true,
and
she
make
did.
Sure. And then I think to myself, I feel like there's 128 Oprahs, and I have half a wife. Because I've been nagging on her to water the pots at our house
right.
for about 3 years and can't wrap her mind around it.
Well,
can't get it done.
You can't set the bar at Oprah. Oprah's everywhere doing everything for everybody.
That's what I'm saying. There has to be more than one of her. And the other thing I was thinking about when I was watching Oprah on the news this morning is I thought, you know, she's so passionate about these women who've been abused, who've been sexually abused, who have not had opportunities in life and so on and so forth. And I thought, right, this is her. She's speaking about herself. And there's a fire inside of her that glows like no other. I mean, when you grow up in a loving environment with two parents who don't molest you and don't abuse you and no one calls you stupid and nobody exhibits any prejudice against you and nobody tries to hold you back, you don't have a fire in your belly. You want to make a few kids and settle in and replicate the life that you knew when you were a child.
Okay.
Oprah doesn't have that. Oprah, every time she starts talking about abuse, you can see her, you know, fist with one hand and a tear coming into the other eye, and you realize, oh, man, somebody abused her, and now she's building schools all over the world because she has that fire in her belly. And I thought to myself, this abuse thing, while normally a bad thing, every once in a while we get an Oprah or a Madonna out of it.
Could be a motivator, really.
Yeah.
This is why I'm thinking we abuse a certain percentage of the young women and men out there, but we try to eliminate those who are just going to go on and abuse their stepchildren or go on and become streetwalkers, but we have one dynamo. You know, we'll have to get rid of 170,000 of the ones that were going to become prostitutes and welfare. But every two would become a power like Oprah, and they would go out making billions and building schools around the world.
True, and you've got a control group because you've got twins. You can abuse one.
So, yeah.
I gotta go.
That's kind of interesting.
I gotta fly. So, Danny, wrap it up. Put a bow on this
problem.
Baby.
I got this for
you. You make an interesting point. Some people have a very, you know, rough childhood filled with suffering, and then they become a brilliant artist or a philanthropist, and some people just become psychopathic or homeless.
If you grow
up, which one I am.
A little bit of both.
If you grow up like Oprah, 99.9% of you go on to be streetwalkers and junkies, but there's that one exception who does that. But what you don't get to do is just have a couple of kids and settle down in your two-bathroom, three-bedroom house.
If you happen to see on Nick at Night or whatever show currently shows the Partridge Family, and you see an episode where my character is raising hamsters to sell for money.
Saw it.
Did you see it?
Yes.
Did you happen to notice that my front teeth are chiclets?
Yes.
In at least two episodes, at least two shots?
I saw
my dad knocked my teeth out.
I saw that one. I saw all the Partridge Families, you know, when they originally aired, and then saw the reruns. But always felt, and T, I'll let you get going with the news. But always felt, and maybe this is another topic for another day, that the Brady Bunch, they ran the snot out of what I think was an inferior product and never really ran as many Partridge Families, which I thought was a superior product.
Well, I guess I'm being flattered. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
I hardly know what to say.
The dynamic between you and Reuben Kincaid, unbelievable. It was very funny.
We were close off the set, too.
Okay, let's talk about ghostwriting.
Yes.
Ghostwriting is when the driver climbs out of the driver's seat of a moving car and dances on the hood or roof while the car continues to move without a driver.
Hold on, we got a new definitely not a Jew. There's no Jew alive that's ever done any ghostwriting.
Ghostwriting for me is when I just take the hands off 10 and 2 and use my knee.
That's right.
That's ghostwriting. Well, this rapper called Mr. Fab released a song called Ghost Ride It, and apparently a couple people have been killed while attempting to ghost ride. Mm-hmm. So he went on Hannity and Combs to defend some of his videos and his songs. Here he is, Mr. Fab on Hannity and Combs.
This is our outlet of opportunity to have fun. We're having fun. Like you said earlier, it's unfortunate when anybody loses their life to do something like this. And it's something that, it's not something that I could be proud about. But the location.
Why glorify it in the video?
We're not glorifying it. I'm just painting a visual. No one criticized Picasso and his art. And this is my art. This is what I'm doing. I'm an artist.
He drew all those black guys in the hood of Impalas. Yeah, nobody said anything back then.
You know, but by the way, if a guy named Mr. Fab
makes you
do something that kills you, I'm fine with that.
I
don't miss any of you.
I was watching it and thinking this is Darwin taking out the garbage.
Right,
I don't want these guys spreading their seed around, the guys who think it'd be a great idea to put the car in cruise control and then climb out onto the hood of the automobile.
If Fab's doing it, I'm going to do it.
And look, I thought about every cop show I saw in the 70s where eventually Starsky and or Hutch would end up on the hood or Beretta of some LTD and get thrown inevitably into a pyramid of cardboard boxes that were in the alley somewhere. I didn't make me want to dive onto a car hood and get thrown into anything in an alley.
Well, Mr. Fab compares it to rodeo or wrestling and says it's a version of urban drifting.
Well, the one guy who died was a white Canadian guy, so I'm not sure if he was a big Mr. Fab fan or not. I mean, Mr. Fab.
Well, it's white people are all buying the rappers anyway. Black people by definition are in the minority, hence the word.
Right.
And they're selling millions upon millions of records. They're going to the white kids in the suburbs.
Yeah, black guy's not going to do any car surfing. I mean, for that, the cops would have to uncuff him and then let him out of the squad car. They're not going to let him onto the hood of the car. By,
if you're lame enough to get out of your car while it's moving and dance on the hood and you die, I'm cool with it.
Okay.
I'm picturing the guy who's talking on the cell phone and driving the car that's approaching the guy who's car surfing. What's the matter, Bert? There's a guy standing on the hood of his car. Oh, maybe he's trying to get something off the roof of his house. No, the car's driving at me.
He's going 70.
Well, who's steering the car? No, nobody's steering the car. No, he's the only guy. He's the only guy on the car. That's awesome. I got to call you back, sweetie.
Well, let me get to this briefly. Evangeline Lilly, who you probably know from the show Lost.
Yes.
I don't know if you watch it. She is now complaining about her fame, saying, quote, "I'm an incredibly private person, and it's so exhausting to me that everywhere I go, people know me or think they know me. If I could act and make the income I make and be anonymous, I would never want to leave the job."
Mm-hmm.
So she's very upset about
it. She's saying she might leave the job.
Well, there's some hint that she is uncomfortable with her fame. Mm. Somebody who's very comfortable with her fame, Anna Nicole Smith. Now, here's the latest on that story. A judge ruled yesterday that her baby, Danny Lynn, must undergo DNA testing by the 23rd of this month. As you may recall, a former boyfriend of hers, that photographer Larry Burkhead, is claiming that he is Danny Lynn's father. So no word from Anna's camp, but by the end of the month, we will know.
I think the Green Bay Packers are also claiming to be the baby's father.
He is, Burkhead is the only guy who looks dicier than Howard K. Stern. And by the way, we've brought it up before, but Howard K. Stern's a Jewish guy who's an attorney.
Yes.
At some point, his parents put him through law school, and now they turn on the shows and the entertainment shows, and they got to see this sap next to this bleached-out, peroxide, bloated nut job over here, and they must be... I don't know what the Jewish form of Harry Carey is. Maybe they do it by just writing you out of the will. Instead of falling on a sword, they pick up a pen, because it's mightier than the sword, and they write your ass right out of the will. But I always think about this poor sap's parents.
Can I tell you, from experience, you do not have to be Jewish to be ashamed of your child for his reality show.
Oh.
You can be Italian.
Touché. Very nice. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. QCNN.
Speaking of Teresa Strasser, yesterday we touched on her MySpace date.
Yeah.
She met a young fella. She drove to halfway to Vegas.
Yeah, I got to Ontario.
Mm-hmm. And then you were in Vegas yesterday as well.
Yeah, at a wedding. At my friend's wedding yesterday, yeah.
You got around.
Ironic. All right. Well, I've missed out on this whole computer dating thing, as is Danny, but there's no way my kid's going to miss out on it.
I mean,
the whole thing about it is the scariest thing you can do as a 14, 13, 15, whatever, teen male, especially when you're in high school and female, but it's sort of up to the male, usually, historically, to go up and ask the girl out. I could remember being in the 7th and 8th grade thinking a girl was cute, but knees knocking, voice cracking when I was asking them to the dance or whatever it was. If I had a computer and could do all this through the veil of the computer, it would make things so much easier. And I would go from, you go from essentially dropping a line into the ocean and hoping that some little guppy bites down on your hook versus throwing a gill net across the entire Pacific and Atlantic Ocean. I mean, you are gill netting.
And you forget that the guppy then sends you a letter back saying, "I'm swimming in your direction as fast as I can, because I really like your net. I love the way you toss that net." They've already made a commitment to you.
Yes.
Before you've ever met. You've spoken to each other in intimate terms, because as sad as this is to say, where I never internet dated, because I've been married long since before I was on MySpace, mm-hmm. I have gotten in a bit of trouble for being overly friendly
mm-hmm.
on MySpace.
You pulled over on the information superhighway
yeah.
where you shouldn't?
I was just like, literally almost kicked out of the house. But it seemed safe and harmless, and who could get hurt?
And your wife found this on your computer?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a MySpace thing. Didn't I tell you this?
You told me after the show yesterday.
Okay, here's what I realized.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break?
As briefly as I can, when I was first, you're not supposed to say those two letters because the last one stands for anonymous. Mm-hmm. When I was in my 12-step programs, mm-hmm. and I used to go all the time, people would say, are you on MySpace? Can I get hold of you on MySpace? Are you on MySpace? So I thought it was a sobriety thing because I don't mm-hmm. know anything about computers.
Right.
And sure enough, this ex-hooker junkie chick mm-hmm. set me up on MySpace, and then the only people that knew I was there were other drunks and junkies, and still, so that's what I thought it was. I mm-hmm. just thought it was a sobriety thing until Linda Happy Ass wrote me. And then
classic.
It just happened. When everybody went, Danny's on MySpace, and I had 6,000 friends within 2 minutes, and they'd send me these almost naked pictures with, I've been your fan since I was 13, I'm 21 now, and I really love you.
I'll buy a hamster from you.
Dude, I got it. Yo, you get carried away.
Yes. Yes.
And I did.
Wow. I want to...
By the way, I'm still on MySpace, but it's with my wife. We share it now.
Yeah, I want to hear your dating stories, your computer dating stories, your MySpace dating stories. I'll tell you a story of being busted myself on the computer, because I've always said that the computer is the male equivalent to the diary. For hundreds of years, women have been keeping diaries. Right. Their stepmothers and fathers, their husbands and boyfriends have been stumbling across these things, and every guy has the same reaction. Who would be stupid enough to write down every stupid thing they did and have their mom reading about how they snuck out of the window and got it on in the parking lot of the El Camino with their boyfriend when they're lying and blah, blah, blah. This is what the computer is, that, except for it is more than that. It has time, date, stamps, whatever. It's right. Like, Danny, what were you doing at 3:13 a.m. Tuesday night up on the computer? Just crunching some numbers, trying to bounce a check.
Oh, really?
Really? Because you're talking to Linda Hotass.
Yeah, because that's the problem. There's also co-authors of your journal now.
We spoke briefly. Really? Here it says 172 minutes.
Yeah, and Happy Pants 2006 sent a photo.
And I don't think that joke that you're only typing with your left hand is that funny.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll hear from you, 866-901-AM. Tell us your MySpace disaster stories. I'll tell you my own, and we'll hear about Teresa's as well after this on the Adam Carolla Show.
Yesterday on the Adam Carolla Show with Teresa Strasser and her MySpace dating experience.
They break out the karaoke, and this couple goes to sing their song. They dedicate it to us. Within about 4 seconds, we were driving toward Vegas.
Really?
I think he sensed that I was having second thoughts. We turned back around and then went to his place. He rejected me in the end.
I don't care which end he rejected me in.
And then he made me breakfast.
Made you a roofie omelet.
Got a MySpace dating story? We want to hear it. Call 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, the computer would have been... Well, I was going to say, I did say that if this thing was around when I was 15, that's how I would have cast my gill net. But I now am going to rescind that statement, because I would have masturbated nonstop, probably 22, 23 hours out of the day if I had a computer back then. I mean, imagine this. We grew up relatively in the same time, Danny, watching all the shows, Wonder Woman, Charlie's Angels, this and that. Cheryl Ladd, Linda Carter, these people, Jacqueline Smith, these were the newer generations, Pam Anderson and Baywatch,
right,
and whatever. Now imagine if at age 15 or 16, a 15-year-old Danny Bonaducci could have hopped on the computer that was in his room and said, Cheryl Ladd, what do we have here? Ooh, she's on a houseboat. She's with a guy steering the houseboat with his wang.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Woo. Take it all, baby. Would you have ever left the house?
Yeah. I mean, first off, your head would have exploded. And then secondly, after we squeegeed your brain off the inside of your mirror, you would have never left the goddamn house again, right?
Now, just so you know this, because I was on the cell phone with my wife right there, and I was standing next to Adam. My wife was complimenting you rather nonstop.
Ah,
and
thank you.
I picked, she said several words, really funny and interesting, this and that. And one of the words was fascinating, and I thought, he'll like that one best, so I'll cut to the chase on the compliment. My wife just said that you're fascinating. My wife, who now you know is listening and can back up this story, if I say I'm going downstairs to check my email real loud, that means keep the kids busy upstairs because I'm downstairs taking care of business.
In the bunker.
Really?
Yeah. That doesn't mean I'm really checking my email. It means I'm doing her a favor.
He's entered the vault of the spank bank.
That's right. Well, exactly right. Exactly.
That's what
right.
I say. That's yes. what I say to my wife. When I say, honey, I'm going to head down to the spank bank and make a withdrawal.
What's a spank
actually,
bank?
Actually deposit.
I learned what a spank bank was last year, but I can say I actually thought that some people were looking for love. You know?
Well, on MySpace, I believe
well,
that they are.
Here's what I will, and we'll get back to that. What I was saying is sadly, most guys are propelled by the millions of sperm that they create every day. That is the motivation. Later on, love, companionship, and all that kind of stuff follows. But what gets us up, gets us to shave and slap on a little aqua velva and leave the house, that's what's brewing in the old crock pot between the legs.
That's true.
And when you let the steam off that crock pot, you don't want to leave. Now, you make the proclamation. As soon as I'm done watching this Pam Anderson video, I will leave and go out and meet my wife. And then it's like, I'm going to stay in.
Yeah, that's true. That's something that girls will never, ever understand, is that while you're telling them how much you love them and are making love to them and it's passionate and amazing, there is a split second where everything changes and we don't want to know you. And yes. we don't care.
I don't even want to touch myself.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted at myself.
I just want to melt into the carpet and die. I've just been so busy telling you how much I love you. But then, if you produce as much as I produce, I think, in the testosterone way, you're in love in 15, 20 minutes. You're all back again.
Yes.
Well, this MySpace guy.
Love refractory yes. period. Very short.
Very short.
The MySpace guy who I met on my one and only internet date, he, this was our song. It was really disappointing that it didn't work out. Because for a moment there, I had that moment that you were talking about, only it wasn't sexual. But, in retrospect, I think he had a really charming letter that he sent me, and I think it might have been a template, which he cut and pasted and sent to a lot of people. I could be wrong. And then I also think on MySpace you have a profile where you list your favorite books and movies, and as soon as he wrote me, I went and checked his, and I thought, oh my, we're soulmates because we like all, he loves Steinbeck and Bukowski, and I realized he could have changed all of his preferences to match mine so that when I went and checked his profile, I would think we were soulmates.
Well, one of two things has happened. Yes. There's only one or two possibilities that I see. One is you have very similar interests, or two, you are an egomaniac, and you feel that this guy, out of all the thousands, because he just copied and pasted a form letter to these women, yet he has changed his profile to fit you.
Well, maybe he does it every few days to whoever he's chasing.
Right. Now I'm going with egomaniac. Yeah.
Egomaniac.
And how about this?
Because I recognize you because I am one. I would think, oh, that bitch totally did that just to get me.
How about this in terms of a bigger picture? I don't want to make any of your heads explode, and I don't want to get too heavy at the 7:15 in the a.m. on a Wednesday. But in the past, genetically, the bigger, better-looking, strapping, blue-eyed, big-shouldered guy had the advantage because it was face-to-face. You would have to go out and meet a woman face-to-face, whether it was in a cave or in the hallway of your high school, it was face-to-face. And the nerd, well, he could find no purchase for his seed. But now, the worm has turned. The nerd, in fact, has quite an advantage over the guy who's genetically, physically superior, the guy with the straight white teeth and the broad shoulders, who was
in our day getting laid much more than the nerd was. Now the nerd can sit there and craft his letters beautifully using his intellect, using his typing ability, his ability to research and use a computer. Now the nerds have an advantage over the captains of the football team because the captain of the football team is good looking. But how many people are you going to meet eye to eye versus how wide a net can you cast on the computer?
And there's not that much money in being the ex-captain of the football team.
Right.
Hence Bruce Springsteen's song Glory Days.
Yes.
But the nerd ends up Bill Gates.
Right.
That's how that happens.
And he is able, because women are more about, well, they use their ears and their brain as much as they use their eyes. Mm-hmm. For a guy, listen, honey, we don't care what you're talking about. Let's send a picture, send a picture, send a picture. For women, if you're saying, yeah, oh, he's my favorite author, and yes, I'd love to go rescue puppies at the pound, he's in, and nerds are much better at that kind of talk than jocks are.
There's a nerd advantage because they can use the liberal arts as a lubricant.
Now,
I consider myself a nerd.
That's right.
Nicely said.
And true.
The, now what I have to admit to is I don't do any MySpacing, and I can't type or spell, and I don't do any back and forth on the computer. But how I've been busted on the computer, and no one has explained how this works, and I'm very unsatisfied with this, which is any guy who shares a computer with his wife, girlfriend, or whoever knows very well that you should erase your history. If you're sitting there looking at German stump porn sites all afternoon when she's out with the kids at the mall, I don't know. I've heard people talk about it.
It's amputees.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
Yes. If that's what you're doing all Sunday while your wife's at the mall with the kids, you don't want her to come back, fire up the computer, and see just how many German stump porn websites you've been looking at. So you get rid of that.
But somebody should tell you, did any guy notice that when you hit delete, there's a little sign in the bottom right-hand corner that says recently deleted?
One?
I didn't realize that till I was stone cold busted.
Here's the worst one, though. When the Mrs. hops on the Google to fire up
recent
the
searches.
She's going to write. No, she's looking for child seats for the children. So she hops on Google and she says, I'm looking for children, child seats. C-H, pow, Christy Canyon pops up. Well, I wasn't looking for Christy Canyon, but evidently somebody was. Now, I've spoken to my computer nerd friends on many occasions and said, look, as long as we're deleting our history, let's go ahead and delete the one that has the porn site pop up when the old lady's looking for something other than porn. And here's everyone's answer. Nothing you can do about that one. And I said, really? There's nothing? Nope. So that's how it is. You punch in a porn star's name, your wife sits down and presses one letter that goes with the first letter of the porn star's name, and the entire porn star's name will pop up before she gets to the second letter, and there's no erasing it, and there's no defeating it, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Now, was your wife actually mad that you had been looking up Christy Canyon?
Literally looking up Christy Canyon?
No.
That's a very odd angle.
No, because we're old friends. We went to, I asked her out, and was turned down by her, by the way. That's how tough it was for the ace man around 18 or 19. Was actually an actual porn star said no before she was a porn star.
Wow.
When she was just a molested girl.
Back in North Hollywood, yes. But I did go. But my victory is her sister asked me to the Sadie Hawkins dance in the ninth grade. So I did hook up with one of the Canyon sisters, although that's not her last name.
Well, listen, on a happy and more innocent note, the wedding I went to last night of one of my best friends, they met on Craigslist.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people getting married.
Hire people from Craigslist? I'm looking for a guy from Craigslist.
Day labor?
My car was stolen. And in it was all the paperwork that said I owned it. And now I have no paperwork, no license plate, no nothing. And I don't know how to register it or get any of that paperwork. Mm. And I'm looking on Craigslist for a guy that knows how to do all that stuff. Isn't that what that's for?
I'm looking for a guy that knows how to do stuff, too.
That's right.
But isn't that like a hiring?
Yes.
Yeah. Going to go through Teresa's glove box. Write that down. New name for Teresa's vagina.
Get out the dipstick.
Trevin?
Yes, sir.
Your name is Trevin.
Yes, sir.
And you're engaged to someone you met on MySpace?
Yes, and I'm currently going through a divorce because of it.
Oh.
Yeah, see, that'll happen.
you're going through a divorce with the person you're currently married to because you're going to marry the person you met on Craigslist or on MySpace.
That is correct.
How did you meet, and was it innocent, or were you looking?
I was looking.
Oh, you were?
Did you list yourself as single?
No, actually, I did not.
So you were pretty much done with the relationship you were in before you got on the computer and started looking?
Very much so.
I don't believe you. I think he was in a totally normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill marriage, got a hold of MySpace, found out what it was that real hot chicks might be interested in this guy, and then he got disinterested in his wife. I don't believe for a second it was over until he found other avenues.
It's another topic even, which is who is more apt to get out of a relationship? Who is essentially more apt to quit their job when they realize there's another higher paying job waiting for them? I would say most human beings, even if they hated their job, and in this case, let's call the job the relationship, would stick it out just because they need a job. But if something came around and said, we'll double your pay and you'll do half the hours and you get 3 weeks off a year, they'd quit their job in a second. I think this happens a lot. This happens a lot. I'm going to digress for a second here. But, you know, have you ever had this happen? It's happened to me a few times. You're with a woman. Maybe you're living together, but you have a long-term relationship. It's been a year or two. You guys break up on a Tuesday, and on Friday she's seeing somebody from work, and you're like, baby, it's been 72 hours. How are you seeing somebody? Well, she knew that guy liked her for the last 3 months. I'm not saying she was seeing him behind your back or cheating, but she knew this guy was in the bullpen. He was warmed up. He's made his intentions clear. He's ready to go. And she didn't drop the axe on your neck until she knew. Thus, she's hooked up with someone immediately. I wonder if guys are now doing that with the computer.
Before the computer, I must say that I don't think that I've ever been on a traditional date ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about 1977 is when I started going out to nightclubs, the year I graduated high school. And the first girl I lived with, her name was Lori, met her in a club. She came home with me and stayed for a year and a half.
Wow.
And she left because I met another girl at a nightclub, told her she had to move out. This girl came home with me and stayed for 3 years.
And then,
so literally, it's been like that until I got married, and I married my wife the day I met her.
Right, and let's not even get him started on the Dave Madden years.
Yeah, those are the ugly years.
Those are the ugly years. Lloyd, play Reuben Kincaid, by the way. Lloyd, tell us your story, please.
All right, so my buddy just broken up with his girlfriend, and he was broken up with her, and we go check his MySpace one day, and bam, he has this tell from the hottest girl ever. She's standing in her underwear. She has a milk carton, and she's just gorgeous. And we're like, whoa, who is this girl?
Wow. Oh, man.
She likes everything he likes. Perfect.
Uh-huh.
Turns out that we go on a date a couple times. We get blown off. Turns out that the girl that he had broken up with was the girl in the MySpace, and was just playing a joke on him, trying to get him back for breaking up with her.
All right, so did anyone cobble that together?
I understood enough of it to know she had a milk carton for no apparent reason.
This is amazing. She's in underpants with a milk carton.
Yeah.
But that was a good part of the story.
That was my
Somebody
favorite part.
Set up a fake MySpace page to try to catch the guy?
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So
well, this is what's going on more and more, too, women trying to bait guys in. And I got to tell you something about men, ladies. We are not guilty if we're baited. Here's what I want to say. If you're walking down the street and there's a prostitute wearing the stiletto heels and the hot pants and the push-up whatever on the corner, you're probably going to keep walking. But if an attractive young girl comes up to you and says, hey, how about we head over here to my car and talk, 99% of guys will just go over to walk, and then they get tackled by the cops because they're Johns now trying to hook up with a prostitute. Here's the thing about guys. There's two types of guys. They're the guys who will go seek out the prostitute, and then they're the guys who won't go out and seek out the prostitute, but will definitely talk to any hot chick who pulls them aside at a party and wants to nibble on their ear.
Right.
It is not a great litmus test to find out whether your guy's being faithful or not to bait him. Because most guys, even if they're being faithful, will bite on to that.
It's a crime of opportunity.
If you're sitting around a computer and a picture of a smoking hot chick pops up on it and says, hey, want to talk,
even guys who are dedicated will go, oh, yeah.
Of course.
We'll have a little conversation here.
It's like, to me, it's like saying you're going to a restaurant and never going to try a different dish.
That's right.
Eventually, if you're hungry enough, and I'm starving almost constantly, and somebody puts a new meal down in front of you, it's been put in front of you for you to have.
I
didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to go out of my way for it.
May I suggest the Strasser Ahi tuna as a starter?
Do you know I got actually emailed about that yesterday?
Did you really?
Because I said Ahi tuna, is that a tad redundant? And it's not. It's a specific kind of tuna, so you were right.
Yellowtail.
I got emailed about correcting you. I couldn't believe it. People listen closely and have too much friggin' time on their hands.
Yellowtail's my Indian name, by the way. It means brave, so they tell me. David?
Yes?
What's your internet dating story? As a matter of fact, why don't you attempt us? Because we'll go out on a break and talk a little more about this. So give us a little teaser, David.
Okay, well, 2 years I worked with my girlfriend, and no chemistry at all. 3 years later, moved to Vegas, and now we're engaged. I got reunited with her on MySpace.
So you were hot for her while you were working with her, but there was no chemistry there.
Absolutely. Well, she was dating somebody that worked
But when
there
you were separated and got to know, yes, it's a good point, and it sort of... it revisits the point I made earlier, which is women... You might do better with a woman via the computer than you would face-to-face. Right. We'll take a quick break. More of your computer dating, MySpace, and so on stories after this. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
This is Kevin. I'm in Olympia, Washington. Hey, please do a bit on the people that do the scale. On a scale from 1 to 10, it was a 20. Do something on that. I hate that. If it's 1 to 10, it's a 10. Thanks.
The Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, you're talking to a guy who has minus about 18 stars in the... I think the man show at some point got minus 3 or 4 stars, and then I did another show where I got minus 4 stars. And again, whether you're the football coach that says he needs 110% out of his players or out of a 1 to... Would you shut up? Brian's pissed off because he screwed something up. Just don't yell the S word, please. All right.
Happy morning show face.
It's 100. Yeah, it's you. I'll let you go ahead and set the limit. Is it 1 to 18? Is it 1 to 25? But then you can't pass that and you can't go under it. I don't like the fact that if I do a show that gets 4 stars and then another show that gets 3 stars, I'm even. I owe stars. You understand?
Okay,
I'm in the hole. I'm minus stars. When I die, my kids are going to owe stars.
Doesn't seem right.
Does not seem right. All right. Where were we? We were talking about the computer.
At least you weren't blamed for the decline of Western civilization.
Well, the New York Times
specifically blamed me. They said, we wondered what would be the worst new thing in reality. We thought it would be live executions. Mm. We were wrong. It's Danny Bonaducci, and it's a worse.
Wow, we had both this year, turns out.
Yeah.
Breaking Bonaducci and
live executions.
Yeah.
I enjoyed watching the Saddam suicide, or I should say hanging, as long as we're talking about it. But I was obviously troubled by the fact, well, my first thing was, boy, this is horrible videotape. Why didn't they get a tripod if they're going to do this? And then the next one was, oh, somebody did this with a telephone. Yeah. And then I thought, wow, you want to talk about high security? You can't stop a guy who's in a party of 8 or 10 people from holding a cell phone up and videotaping something that you don't want videotaped. Or maybe they wanted it videotaped. It's a weird thing. Like, there's certain things in life where I think they couldn't have possibly not wanted this to happen. Because if they really, truly didn't want this videotaped, then they would have strip searched everyone, sent them through a metal detector. We truly don't want people to bring guns on airplanes. Thus, we do things that are appropriate to keep people with guns off of airplanes.
Right.
But if you really didn't want a guy who was hanging out at the Saddam hanging out, pardon the pun, at the Saddam hanging, wouldn't you figure out a way to stop a guy from sneaking a camera in there or a camera and a cell phone? And didn't anyone think of this before it took place?
The reason I am sure, because normally I would think, because it would escape me. It would. I am new to technology, even though my phone does have a camera in it. I am new to technology. It might escape me. but I am a member of the YMCA, and there are signs in the locker room everywhere saying no cell phones.
Ah, because this
because they have the you can take a picture of that. Did you know that's why all cell phone cameras now click? They make a noise now
warn
you that you're having your picture taken.
Well, this leads us back to our topic, because one of the things that people complain about with the internet dating is that people post either old pictures or misleading pictures.
They do that all the time. I got this letter from this young lady. She had seen my TV show and said me to sober up and all that crap. And she wrote how terrible her life is. And I wrote back, you write really well. You're very articulate. And you look like Angelina Jolie. How bad can life be? It was a picture of Angelina Jolie. Not a dick.
Raven?
Yeah?
You met your fiancé on a video game?
Yeah, we both play online video games. And I'm actually from the Midwest, and he was from the East Coast.
Hold on. I'm going to do a little radio weight math here.
I was waiting for this, Adam.
Well, I've tacked on 25 pounds because her name is Raven, right?
See,
right
I,
there.
When
you're named after a giant black bird, you pack on. So I start everyone at 1:30.
And
so I got her at 155. Midwest
is another.
I've just tacked on another 20 pounds, or 175. And then met fiance playing video games over the computer. I just tacked on a metric ton.
An entire ton.
2,200 pounds. Actually, metric ton's a little bit heavier. 2,000 wouldn't exactly do it for her. Raven?
Yeah?
What are you coming in at, weight-wise?
Well, I'm pregnant right now, so does that count?
Well, it counts for, I'll give you 25, but not the 225.
It depends. Do you know who the father is? Because if you know who the father is, we deduct a point.
Yes.
You met him online.
Yeah, one of the Mario brothers.
can I ask Raven a question? When you met your fiance, did he look how you thought? Were you attracted to him right away?
Actually, that's how we met. We both had posted pictures on a forum, and I'm really into fast cars.
Mm.
And he was standing in front of his car, and I started looking at his picture over and over again. And one day I happened to get a message from him in game saying he liked my picture.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, this is the guy I'd been staring at for months.
All right, I'm going to guess his car.
Okay.
Mustang.
No, God, no.
GTO.
Wait, one more guess.
Yes, I rock Chevy.
No.
Camaro. Chevy Impala. SS Chevy.
No.
Damn. I got American Muscle going here.
No, it's not American. In fact, I hate American cars.
Ooh, you just dropped 18 pounds. you're down to 322.
You got another guess now, though, Adam?
Wow. I'm going to go Acura.
No.
I'm going to go Ferrari.
No.
Lamborghini.
No, hold on. Guys who drive those cars ain't cruising for chicks on the internet.
Maybe it will help you a bit. He's Asian.
Honda.
So it doesn't matter what he drives, he does it badly.
Toyota. Oh,
Guy
Aoki. That was Danny Bonaducci talking. All right.
I have to drive here through Koreatown, too.
Well, this is true. All right, where were we, Raven? What kind of car was it, anyway? Just for us, Supra, Toyota Supra.
No, he drives a Lancer Evolution.
That was my next guess.
All-wheel drive, 370 horsepower. No, it wasn't.
I drove the STI, which is the sister car.
The Subaru.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately was attracted to the fact that he liked good cars, because... Mm-hmm. Speed is definitely one of the things I have to have in my life.
I feel like Asian is a good direction to go if you're going to date sight unseen.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Now, you have a 1% chance of getting that guy from up north that had the dungeon in his basement, was torturing people. But by and large, you're going to get gainfully employed, not a drug addict, and knows his way around a Mitsubishi.
Dan Lee, I believe, was that guy's name.
Yes.
Did he look like his photo in person?
Yes. In fact, he was much more attractive in person. He came out to see me in the Midwest, and within, I think, a few hours, we were very close.
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, doing it close?
We were very, very close.
Well, that's the other thing, too. It, while technically it's the first date, it's the 100th date, because you guys have corresponded
right, exactly.
99 times
right.
before that. So there's no reason why you can't give it up. You've known the guy. As a matter of fact, it's better than going out on 3 or 4 dates and then giving it up. You guys have just had conversation for a year before you meet. Well, so now, you're now pregnant with his child.
Yeah, it's been, I've moved to the Midwest. I'm about 3,000 miles from the Midwest to California.
Mm-hmm.
And we're engaged. We're expecting our first baby.
Fantastic.
And I have to admit, if I never played video games and I wasn't into nerds, I would not be in sunny California.
All right. Well, there you go, Miss Pac-Man.
Congratulations on your baby.
Don over here said the guy made her wear a blindfold. I'm not sure what this is. Don?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I met the guy online. We corresponded quite a few times, exchanged photos. He was hot. He was so beautiful. And I opted to go drive up to his home to see him, which was in San Francisco area.
How many miles from your home?
I live in Visalia, so that's about 250.
All right, I'm going to put 9 ounces on for every mile she travels from her house.
With MapQuest, it's 1,100 miles from my house.
That's right. When you pack your ass into a car and drive 200 miles to meet a guy,
it's
you're,
pretty much like what happens
on
to Catch a Predator. They're always coming from miles and miles away.
Hello. And what happened? You knocked on the door and he said, "Let yourself in. I'm making some sweet tea."
No, that was worlds before I got there. And
that guy from NBC comes out.
You're naked. There's a 14-year-old girl.
That guy.
You're chasing a cat around.
Chris Hansen.
You got Cool Whip.
And the guy
got Cool Whip and a cat.
And the guy, the thing that always kills me about this, and maybe this is what makes me criminally insane. Forget the fact that the guy wants to F a 13-year-old.
Right.
I can't get over the fact that this guy's wearing a hoodie with cut-off sleeves and flip-flops to his first date.
Right. Yes, well, if he had good social skills, he wouldn't be trying to
guess so.
Looks
like I'm screaming at the TV set, "Do you not have a button-up shirt that you can wear to your first date?"
The thing is, in my house, in my own home, I'm always sure somebody's going to come in when I don't want them to.
Right.
When you're stalking a child and the person, and it's this big house in the country, and you hear, "Come on in."
I'm cleaning out the lint tray.
I'm making some cookies.
Have some sweet tea and some Tall House cookies.
I like it if they hire Danny to play the young boy and his
what
voice comes out.
What girl wants to get oral sex?
What does that sound
man
like?
Is in shape.
Yeah, come on in. Make yourself comfortable. I just made some cookies.
I'll play the John. Mandy?
Yeah. Come on in. Thanks for ringing the doorbell.
Mandy, this is the 13-year-old virgin I've been talking. This is Hot Pants.
Your mistake. It's Man D. Man D.
This is not Hello Kitty 55.
No. Have some sweet tea, though.
Look, I'm going to go out to the truck and have a nip. I'm going to have a 12-pack or two.
Can we
I'll
find
be back.
Out what happened with Don?
Oh, yeah. That's right, Don. Don?
Yes.
What's happening? I'm sorry. Blindfold.
Blindfold. There was a rule before I got there. The thing was I had to be dressed up like in cocktail attire, and the blindfold was on the front door, on the door when I walked in. And I did it. I went through with it. I had a beautiful dinner, tons of drinks. He fed me.
The blindfold never removed?
Never.
What?
And
never.
You had to be dressed up in like an evening dress. So you were like dressed to the nines, right?
Yes, I was.
You drive 200 miles to the guy's house. You put the blindfold on.
I got dressed in a gas station down the street.
Because you had to drive
another 70
way.
Pounds.
She was driving from Visalia.
Right. So you
didn't want to drive all that way in that outfit.
You make a 3-hour drive over to the guy's house. You put the blindfold on. I imagine, by the way, as he leads you through the living room with the blindfold on, you're navigating an obstacle course of hooker
corpses.
Hooker corpses are spread out. What was that? Just a roll of carpet. Keep walking.
That was Crystal.
See, not me. I've got friends over.
Keeps walking.
I've got
chilling twist.
I've got friends
to the corpse.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Scattered around the house watching to see if the big girl that drove 3 hours is going to do this.
Wait,
or not.
What happened?
I'm not a big girl.
Don, what did you end up doing with this nice young man?
He got intimate with other things. Ooh. I never was allowed to touch his body.
Oh, okay, so
I have a feeling it was body.
It's
very unpleasant. If he had a blindfold on you.
The next morning I woke up, I took the blindfold off to leave, and saw what he really looked like. He was like 300 pounds, curly, crazy hair, kind of like Adams. It was kind of crazy.
Okay, but don't you get...
Don't drag Adam into this.
Don't you get that you did all that, that you knew all that was happening?
I'm still not sure what she did with him.
She took off her clothes and he went down to the spank bank.
We were very intimate with objects from the kitchen.
A liar.
Clear. I know we got beeped out for some reason, but Angie, producer Angie, clear the calendar for the rest of this month.
It's
and actually,
gone.
Tell Frosty, Heidi, and Frank they're not going to have to come in today because I have about another 7 hours to dedicate to Don, and that's only on the air.
Okay, I'm sick of all your lies.
I'll be giving my cell phone number and speaking to you on the way home.
We'll be talking to Don and Don.
Yeah, that's right. Don, hold on. Don't go away. You're no good for me. Hold on, little Frankie Avalon for you folks. Hang on, because I need to explore what goes on after this. Now, so far, we know she drove a couple hundred miles to meet a guy she met online. Changed at the gas station. Class move, by the way, when they see you
leaving. Like a 16-year-old whose father says you're not leaving the house in that outfit.
Right.
Dress nice, and then you go to the gas station.
Blindfold on the door.
Yes. And enters the home. It gets wined and dined, but then a whole 9.5 weeks, Kim Basinger, Mickey Rourke kitchen scene breaks out.
Right.
With the kielbasa and God knows what else. Eventually, never touches the man who's morbidly obese and has crazy hair, much like my own. Hold on. We'll take a break. I want to go through this step by step. We'll do that after this on the Adam Carolla Show.
Show is going back to the Playboy Mansion for another live broadcast on January 18th. Want to go? Listen to Adam next Monday morning to win tickets. And don't miss the 90-minute premiere of The Apprentice, Los Angeles, Sunday night at 9:30 on NBC. Listen Monday morning, answer a few questions about the episode, and you win tickets. The Apprentice, Los Angeles. New city, new twists. Winners live in a Hollywood Hills mansion. Losers sleep in tents in the backyard. Let's get back to Adam, Teresa, and Danny on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, my good, faithful sidekick, Oswaldo Castillo, is ready to deliver a review of Rocky Balboa, which I saw as well, so I can contribute, and so did Teresa Strasser. But first, unfinished business with Dawn. Dawn drove 200 miles. You live in Visalia.
You know, my husband reminded me, I lived in Fresno at the time. To take off a few miles.
This is a story you've told your husband?
He didn't kill himself during the commercial?
I met him on Match.com.
Right, but the story is you're the first person I've ever met. Like, when you have a one-night stand, you tell the guy, I've never done this before, so he feels better about himself. You sharing the story with the husband about going over to the guy who's morbidly obese and doing all kinds of bizarre things in his kitchen.
With a kielbasa.
With him. Yes, it's probably not the kind of pillow talk. Yeah. At least I enjoy.
I actually fought with my wife yesterday because I found out she dated a guy before I met her. Who I happen to think was a very funny comic.
Yes.
And it made me mad that she had dated this funny guy.
Yes, more mystery, less history, as I like to say.
My husband lives vicariously through me. He loves the story.
Well, Don, was the stuff in the kitchen, was it produce or utensils?
It was produce.
Produce.
Extra large produce.
And you...
Extra large, like eggplant?
Zucchini?
I think, it was cucumber-ish.
Please do not get into the gourd family. I will project. If you start telling me one of those prize-winning pumpkins, the ones you see, they come in at 1,300 pounds.
Oh, no.
So you go to the guy's house. You drive for 200 miles. You do that class move, which is you change in your cocktail attire in the 76 station bathroom. You walk back out to the car. You drive to the guy's house, but you don't see him. You just knock on the door, right?
And I put the blindfold on.
Now, the blindfold is in the mailbox. Where is it?
Hanging on the front door.
Mm-hmm.
A
mm-hmm.
classy satin, the whole, you know, beautiful eye thing.
Mm-hmm. So you put the blindfold on, and you don't cheat. You don't sneak a peek, because that's what I would do.
Yeah, sure.
The only thing I could see was the bottom, the floor, and there was no hookers or anything on the floor.
So he'd cleared those out.
Yeah, but there was probably some big fat feet.
So the guy, now, and you couldn't tell the guy was 300 pounds by the heavy breathing or the fact that the floorboards would creak as he walked to the kitchen, or just the fact he wanted to focus all his sexual energy in the kitchen.
No, he... he had such a very sexy voice. It was very, it didn't sound like a 300-pounder man.
Yeah, because usually a 300-pound person has very fat. No. Well, they sound like fat people.
Mm-hmm. That's what attracted me on the phone, because we even were intimate on the phone before, and it was, oh, you know, wow. Mm-hmm. And so I never...
That's an oxymoron right there. Intimate on the phone.
So you go into the guy's kitchen and he wines and dines you?
Yes.
Now, with the blindfold, are you ever worried for your safety? This guy's a maniac. He's going to hurt me.
I did at first. I was kind of nervous. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh. All right. Listen, don't bleep that stuff out, for Christ's sake. We're allowed to do double entendre stuff here, are we not?
We're not allowed to do the single entendre. I've heard that.
Yes.
But the double lots were allowed.
Sure. So, so he plies you with some wine.
Yes.
And then he heads to the produce section. Hold on, another good name for Teresa's vagina.
It's always chilly in there.
Another rule was that I wasn't allowed to touch him, and that he was going to have to do pretty much all of the action.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up for it before getting there, so I knew what was in store when I got there.
Right, I was going to ask that. Had the rules been set in the emails and texts back and forth?
Yes, they were.
You're going to wear a blindfold, but and I'm going to go crazy.
Mm-hmm. It was his fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Did he eat the food after it was up there?
I don't know. I left so damn quick the next day. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And so all this... all this whoopee took place on the cold linoleum of the kitchen floor?
No. He took a basket with us to his...
doesn't that actually happen in that movie? Somebody gets in the basket?
Hold on. Horn of Plenty.
Put the lotion in the basket?
Horn of Plenty. Good name for Teresa's
vagina.
Yeah.
Another one.
All right, so he takes his Horn of Plenty. Hold on. Good name for the Ace Man's junk.
There you go.
Takes the Horn of Plenty and takes it with him to the bedroom.
Yes.
With you.
Yes.
The blindfold still on.
Yes.
Clothes
room. Cocktail dress still on.
And now, are at some point, do the clothes come off?
Yes.
They didn't. The panties did, but not the dress.
No, the dress went up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Panties down, dress up.
Yes.
Yes. And then he continued to do his Joe Carcione, the green grocer, move on you.
Got a little baiting right there.
I know. I don't even know where that name came from.
Yes.
With the various things from the garden.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then he pulled out his salad shooter, and the party really began. Who decided that was a good invention? This thing runs off 210, and it shoots salad into the bowl. I don't know if we need one of those.
No, because you don't shoot.
The whole experience was great.
Good salads are tossed.
They're not
at
shot.
The table.
They're not shot.
No, Don's making a good point, which is that perhaps you're a 300-400-pound man who doesn't want to be seen.
They
and everything.
Too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And also, maybe they have some extra skill. They put extra effort in.
Oh, look, we've talked about this many times. This is why handicapped people make the best employees. They show up early, they work harder, they overcompensate. Fat guy will do this. Look, if this guy looked like Lorenzo Lamas, he'd say, baby, drive over to the house, F the blindfold, you'll see my dork pop through the mail chute, get busy, and then hit the bricks.
Right.
There'd be no with the salad and the whining and dining and the baskets and the don't touch me.
I would tend to agree with you. Sometimes I would think that ego, because the people that have sex
and
with Lorenzo
I say that,
Lamas.
By the way, I say that Lorenzo Lamas story from experience. Okay.
Because what I have learned from a little bit of experience in this area is that people are going to tell people about having sex with you.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And you just want, for your want, own ego, want, you want to be word. Good.
So this guy now, we're back at the bedroom. He's got the basket. He's going sick on you. With God knows what. And how do you know when you're done, by the way, when you're being raped by a zucchini? This
cucumber.
A cucumber.
See, I've been your guava.
How do you...
It was, like I said, it was a very different experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was something that I'd never done before. Yeah. It was very nice, mm-hmm. but I was done. And
you were done, but you slept over.
I did with the mask on, and that's when the next morning I woke up, my mask had taken off.
The mask off. And all the produce driven excitement, the mask never slipped off.
You know, remember the story of the Ghost of Christmas Past, and he's on that cornucopia of food products, and it's that big stack. She's just had sex with all that stuff.
Right.
She just passed out. She didn't fall asleep.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
She was the human salad shooter, and she passed out.
But when you saw him, could you hide your disappointment? Did you mention anything? Did you say anything?
I tried to leave. I tried to leave before he saw me, and he saw that I had saw what he looked like, and I had left my makeup bag.
Don't look at me.
It's that story where, like, they went up the beanstalk to steal the golden goose before the giant woke up. And so you could hear his footsteps, boom, boom, as he stumbled down the stairs.
So you tried to get out.
As soon as I shut his door, he came out, and you could see the disappointment on his face that I had seen him. And he saw all my stuff in his bathroom. And he was like, you forgot your bag. And I was like, that's okay. That's okay. I'll see you later.
I can buy more makeup, but my dignity is not for sale.
Oh, my God, just because she saw him, the fact that she was willing to do this with a stranger.
Did you expect Hugh Grant when you pulled the things off, holding a tray with breakfast in bed? I mean, what did you figure that he was going to look like?
He was in bed with, like, a fat, ugly soprano.
But have you ever seen Divine Brown?
Yes.
Do you ever think she was going to wake up with Hugh Grant? But yes, not only did she, he paid for the pleasure, and that woman's a wildebeest.
Yeah.
I don't think she's so bad.
No.
He was quite pleased when he saw me walk in, and so I was kind of disappointed after, seeing the gorgeous pictures and the beautiful voice, and then...
Oh, he sent you beautiful pictures of himself.
Yeah, he did, and he was gorgeous.
Look, here's the deal with anybody who's selling either themselves or anything. Anytime there's the price is so low that I can't mention it on the air, or I'm an Adonis, but yet I can't avert your gaze, put this blindfold. If they're hot and it's cheap, they're telling you the price, and they're not supplying a blindfold.
Right.
That's
absolutely
right. That's how you know, bottom line in life. Well, Don...
Yes.
You learned a very valuable lesson, one I hope and pray you pass on to your children and their grandchildren as well.
I did.
You did. You spoke to your young daughter about this?
Yes. My daughter is the one that actually put me on the MySpace.
And you told her everything that went on?
Yeah. Well, no. She just heard just now kind of tidbits of it, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Honey, yes. I don't want you to get raped by a morbidly obese man with a zucchini.
No, it's
like made that mistake before.
She shrunk it down to a gherkin.
No, now I just get raped by my 6'6" husband.
Nice. All right, baby. Let me please ask you to stop having kids.
Did I?
I would like you. I'm making this plea. As a matter of fact, I will send you out a windbreaker if you promise me not to.
We took care of that with my last one.
Oh, you did?
Yes, we did.
He got his tubes tied, or you got a gourd wedge up there?
I got his fixed, and then I got myself fixed.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wow, both of you. All right.
Do you have a problem with warts? Nope, that's a pumpkin.
Yeah. What's your husband do?
He is an officer with the state of California.
Perfect. You know, nice of his buddies are listening.
He's a prison guard.
They seem a lot more than they should have. So
his buddies, prison guard.
Is he a prison guard?
Oh no.
No.
Parole?
No. He is. He makes money for the state by getting tickets.
Meter maid.
He's a meter maid.
Whatever. He drives a black and white car.
Right.
Right.
But it only has three wheels, and it's made by Harley Davidson.
And nobody ever says one out of 12 to him, ever.
Absolutely not.
Does he carry a gun? Does he carry a gun, or does he carry mace?
No, he carries guns.
A gun with mace in it?
No.
Highway patrol.
Does Sheriff Andy make him carry the bullet in his pocket?
He's a meter maid.
Yeah. No, he's a highway patrol.
Oh, okay.
All right. Look, I got to tell you, if I was going to be a state trooper or a highway patrolman, I would not do it out here in SoCal with the crappy brown uniforms. I'd move up toward the New England area where the guys wear Mountie outfits.
That.
I mean, where the guy's literally wearing riding boots. He's dressed like Dudley Do-Right. He's wearing, like, spats and stuff. The guy's dressed like Captain Crunch. That's what I would do. I would base my law enforcement on the coolest uniforms. There's nothing worse than that sort of a crap brown, you know, whatever, with no hat that goes on. Hell no. Give me the Mountie uniform.
Having been arrested in several different jurisdictions, I can tell you that the cops wearing the uglier uniforms are meaner.
Yeah, there you go.
They're more physically, because I just usually give up. I don't want to fight about it. I'm okay, I'm caught. Let's go and get this over with. And the guys in the ugly uniforms usually kick your ass first.
Yeah, I would steer away from any municipality that had the knee socks and the pith helmet and head more toward the riding boots and crop. All right, well, there you go. Don. I got to say, if I had a nickel for every time some caller called up talking about being raped by a fat guy.
Yes, Don was in a pickle, and the pickle was in her.
There you go. Oswaldo, the great Oswaldo, has one of his patented movie reviews when we come back. And then I'll tell you a story. I was talking to my grandma yesterday. I was over at her house paying her a little visit. We were having a nice discussion about her brother killing himself with a shotgun in the house that she then moved into shortly thereafter. And I said, didn't that weird you out? And she said, nah, not really. So I want to get into that because I told her... it would weird out a lot of people. And as a matter of fact, when you sell your house, if somebody died in the house, you must disclose that. Yeah. She said, well, laws were different back when we sold that house because we didn't mention it. So we just pulled the carpet right over the corpse. We'll take a quick break. We'll get into that. First, Ozzy with a movie review, Rocky Balboa, after this.
Ozzy fled Nicaragua and headed for the States. His legendary flap steak.
Chimichurri.
Oh, yeah. Oswaldo can't pronounce the word Adam right. Oh, Adam's name is something that he can't say.
Adam?
Oh, 16 years.
Took a break from painting my house. Come over here and share a movie review with us.
Talented guy.
Oh, yes.
Good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Ozzy.
Does Thank it all. You. There's a new and strange piece of meat on my kitchen counter every day. I come down my stairs. Ozzy shows up. I'm like, what day is pork? I cook for you. Yes, Ozzy.
You got
thank
it,
you.
My baby.
I'm going to die soon because of you, but thank you. All right, Ozzy, what movie did you see?
Rocky Balboa.
Rocky. Tell us about it.
Yep.
Oswaldo. Hey, let's buy some movies. We want to know which movies you have seen. Go ahead, Oswaldo, tell us.
The movie that I saw this weekend is Rocky Balboa. Sylvester Stallone star is Rocky Balboa. Burt Young.
Sylvester. That's right, Sylvester. That's exactly
Burt Young
what I said. Yes.
As Paulie. And Antonio Tarver is Mason DeLine Dixon.
Yeah, strange name. I guess they were going like Mason Dixon line or something. It's weird. It's weird. I understand naming yourself the Sandman or the Heater or whatever, but the line... Mason Dixon line? Anyway.
Maybe the line to the chop, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, line to the chop.
The retired guy, Rocky Balboa, coming back to the ring to fight the legendary boxing champion, Mason the Line Dixon.
Dixon. Right.
Dixon. He fight for the honor of the family and the country. Here is a clear virtual fight between Rocky and Mason the line did song.
This is a clip.
Clip, yeah.
Clip?
Let's see what the...
Clip.
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 Let's see what the computer has to say. Let's have it.
Dixon unloads on Balboa. Rocky has no answer. Oh, a murderous right hook as he tumbles to the ground.
Yeah, they did that thing that movies still do, which is... I thought this is the way the world worked when I was young, and I realize it doesn't now. That when ESPN2 shows something at 4 a.m., the entire city is buzzing about it the following morning.
Right.
Hey, did you see ESPN2 at 4 a.m. last night? Yeah, and then Teresa would say, I saw that too, and then the phones would be ringing off the hook. Doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way.
But in movies, it does. They run one stupid computer graphic, and everyone in every bar in Philadelphia is buzzing about it. And now the American people want to see Rocky Balboa, 60-year-old Rocky Balboa, go up against Mason Dixon. Right.
I remember a long time ago, the music.
Yeah, the Rocky.
Exercise.
Yeah.
The X and the glass.
The what?
The eggs in the glass.
Eggs in the glass.
Huevos.
Yes.
Huevos.
Yes.
No rancheros.
No rancheros. That's right. That's right.
The passion. The dedication for the dream.
The dream, yes.
Hey, Rocky talked to the song about the life.
He's talking about his son, yes.
You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth.
Yeah, that was really the first hour and 25 minutes of the movie was just sort of... It was almost like he had a palsy and he had marbles in his mouth and he was half drunk and he was just giving these one inspirational speech after the next, but it wasn't really that inspirational.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not that great.
You think it's tough out there. It's a war. You get knocked out, you got to get up. It's like, yeah. One cliche after the next. Yes, that's all it was.
Be careful. Maybe you have the same problem with Sonny.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
My son.
He'll turn against you.
Interesting.
Yeah. Think about it, okay?
Yeah.
In my country.
You mean Nicaragua?
By the way.
No, America.
My son thinks. My son.
He made me do it, Adam.
My son thinks you're his dad.
Really?
My nanny, Olga, is his mom. No. I'm convinced my kid thinks he's in South America somewhere now or some part of Mexico. 99% of the people that are at my house don't speak English.
Is that because
Olga is from Guatemala?
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Which it turns out it's not in Mexico. And as it turns out, people from Guatemala actually take offense to when you think it's in Mexico. And they take more offense after they correct you and you go, who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah. One big crap factory. Right. Sorry, Ozzy.
Again,
yes.
In my country,
Mexico.
Oh, come on, man. America, man. America.
That's right.
Well, the famous Rocky, the star, the hero, the symbol. In the end of the day, Rocky Balboa left this reviewer cold.
Left you cold.
Yep.
People were prepared to be disappointed and embarrassed by the movie, and they weren't. Thus, everyone's calling it a great movie. It is the first hour's way too much just alone sitting around and mumbling and it spitting out his well-worn sort of isms about life knocking you down and then meeting some woman who he's not attracted to who lives in the old neighborhood with a half black, half white son where there's no real relationship with him. It's plodding and arduous and then it gets to the fight stuff and the music cues up and everyone feels good about it.
Now, can I take a guess? Is Mason the line Dixon a racist? Is that why he has to fight?
No.
He's a Mike Tyson figure, I think.
He's even sort of confusingly sort of not hateable either. I mean, he's not really in his grill calling him an old man too much. The movie, here's the deal. If the movie starts at 2 o'clock, if there's a 2 o'clock showing of this movie, you show up about 3:10, 3:15, enjoy the last 20 minutes, and you'll enjoy a good movie. All right, Ozzy.
Thank you so much.
That was lovely. I've never experienced that before. That was wonderful.
Well, yep, thank you.
Every
I try my English.
Once a week. All right, baby, that house ain't going to paint itself.
Yep.
Mach schnell.
I ruin it.
Thank you. I know what that means, but I want you to do it. We need to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you because, as I mentioned, I had a little sit-down with my grandma. She was explaining that when her brother killed himself, he was probably in his mid-30s. No sooner did the corpse was cold and dragged out of the house than she moved right into the house, and it wasn't the kind of thing where he killed himself in the north wing of the house.
Right.
We're talking about one or two bedrooms, one bathroom, you know, 900-square-foot ranch shack in the valley.
Right.
Moved right on in. And I said, didn't that freak you out? And she said, no. And I said, you must, and people don't know this, you must disclose that if you sell a house and somebody off themselves in the house. It's the kind of thing that people want to know. And it's also the kind of thing that I think most women and a lot of men, but probably more women, wouldn't appreciate. I don't know if my wife would be cool. You tell me if your wife, Gretchen, would be cool if I said we're moving into a house where the owner killed himself in the master bedroom. I don't know if she'd want that house. And as a matter of fact, I think there's a price. I think most people would be willing to take 10% yes. off or add 15%
I've
or whatever it was.
I've actually seen a house on the news where there was mass murder. I thought, I'll bet you get that house cheap.
That's what happened with me in my house. I found out it was a $1 million house, and they said the previous owner committed suicide, and it got down to 900. Then I found out they shot a porn, and it shot up to $1.3 million. It went the other way.
It neutralized the effect of the suicide.
That's right. Wow. That's right. All right. We will take ourselves a break. You tell us what you think about this topic. And believe it or not, Danny and Teresa both have family members that have decided to check out early at their own hand. We'll take a quick break. We'll tell you the rest of the story after this.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci. Here's Adam.
Yeah, before we talk morbid real estate, I want to talk about someone else other than my grandmother who's old. Listen to what I heard when I was watching The Insider last night.
Now tomorrow on The Insider.
Did Nancy Reagan have a facelift? Is there a secret to her fresh new look? Tomorrow on The Insider.
She's 85. Fresh and new, probably aren't the words you use once you pass the 80 mark. Really? This is entertainment news?
It's also unlikely.
It's unlikely, but so she's 85 and looks, what, 78?
Yeah. Ooh.
Doesn't look a day over.
I know she had worked. Her husband's barely in the ground, and you're doing these stories. And speaking of husbands in the ground, the other half of The Insider and Access Hollywood and all this was a bunch of Betty Ford stuff. And it was, you know, we'll miss Gerald Ford, but Betty Ford, a pill popper.
Yeah.
I mean, it went all out about her being an alcoholic, whatever, more than 20 years ago. Now, right? I mean, Betty Ford, well, Danny, you could tell us probably better than we could tell you.
Having stayed in her house for 30 days.
Did
yes.
you? 28 or the full?
No, full 30.
It was established in 82, so I'm guessing she was off the sauce by the time the Betty Ford Clinic had opened, which would make it 25 years since she's had a belt.
That's if you're a completely decent person. I have given speeches at schools about the dangers of drugs while wasted.
Mm.
And looking right at these fresh little faces, which are, you know, growing horns and melting right in front of my face.
Sure.
And I am telling them sincerely and honestly about the dangers of drugs. It doesn't mean I wasn't currently on them.
Yes.
It just meant that my probation officer said I had to go say no to drugs.
Well, do as Danny say, not as Danny does.
So, yes. The Betty Ford Center doesn't necessarily mean she could have gotten busted being the first wasted lady and said, hey, I better open a center.
But I'm just going to assume that it's been a good 25 years since she's picked up the bottle. Thus, I would go ahead and label it old news. Her husband's dead. Well, may he rest in peace. Let's not bring up the fact that she was a pill popper and into the shops in the late 70s.
Well, I think in a positive context.
It's good hard hair-hating journalism, though. You ripping the scab off a wound that healed 25 years ago.
Well, I think she did a lot of good for people with drug and alcohol problems by making it less stigmatized.
She did, but Pat O'Brien didn't do any good by asking whether she's still boozing or whether Nancy Reagan has had a facelift
or
not.
Well, no, if she got drunk enough, could he do her? Because Pat's busy.
She does look like the world's oldest anorexic, Nancy Reagan.
Yes, they usually don't make it past their teens. All right, now where were we? Speaking of old, I sat down with my old grandmother yesterday and had a little FaceTime in with Granny Helen in her palatial North Hollywood one-bathroom estate. She was, my grandmother does not listen to the show, but she will magically hear the bad stuff, like the time I called her house a dump, and will tell me we need to speak about once a month about something I said about her, the family, or the house that she lives in. But she had another house, and we're talking, Granny Helen is 93.
I was going to say, it's weird that your grandmother's alive.
Yes.
And that struck me.
And she lives on her own. She must be very spry.
Yes. Yes. She's spry. I was thinking that as I was wheeling her over to the table and watching the food fall out of her mouth. I thought, spry. Spry. And being attacked by her cat.
Oh, no.
You know, let me tell you something
about... Grim Reaper was in the background waiting.
If she goes, that cat will eat her. That always happens. They start with your feet.
From your mouth to God's ears.
I'm telling you.
And I was thinking about it with the cats. The cats, and everyone complains about cats. Like, oh, they're standoffish. Oh, they act like their poop doesn't stink. And they want nothing to do with you. You know what? Count your blessings, because her cats have warmed up to me, and now it's one big stinky fur ball rubbing up against my slacks and jumping onto my lap and kneading me with the claws.
Yeah.
Look, when a cat ignores you, it's like a hobo ignoring you. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
What do you want, that hobo on your lap, purring and rubbing its ass against you?
So your Grandma Helen's with the cats.
Oh, yeah.
You're good at this. Because collectively they've hired the only guy less on track than Adam has come to work
and
here.
And she starts to tell you about her brother, who I imagine was her younger brother?
No, older.
Older, okay.
A year or two older, I imagine. And he was very close to the father. And him and the father lived together. It was a weird, troubled, effed up situation. My grandmother's a sort of native Southern Californian. She grew up in Los Angeles and would always tells me these crazy stories about, you know, Wilshire Boulevard was nothing but bean fields as far as the eye could see all the way to the beach. And, oh, yeah, Sunset, where the Roxy is, or where the comedy store is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to go up there. That's where they had, there was a chicken ranch. We used to get our chickens up there. You'd go up there, you'd get your own chicken, and like really the middle of the Sunset Strip. And then and my tone always goes from delight to, and you couldn't have bought one goddamn block
right
on Sunset or Wilshire, you crazy hag! Like, in my head, like, the outer Adam is, do tell. In the inner is, you couldn't have bought 10 feet of real estate on Ventura Boulevard or Wilshire or Sunset on the chicken ranch! Jesus effing Christ, old lady!
Well, it sounds like there was a lot going on in the family back then.
Yes.
Is that what it sounds like? Is that what you're guessing?
So the father and the son were very close, so close that they lived together even while the son was an adult. He was always kind of a weird outsider. They used to like going hunting and fishing, go up to the cabin. And everything, yeah.
I've done a little hunting on Sunset. Done a little trolling, you know.
So, chum the water with Coke. So... the father dies, and I don't know, he has a heart attack or he does whatever fat guys who are 63 years old do. He just has a heart attack, and the son just kills himself the next day.
The next day?
Yeah, just takes one of the hunting shotguns and says, well, Pops is gone, he's my best friend, and now I'm going to join him.
Wow.
Wow, you'd really have to like somebody.
I know.
Or be enmeshed in some way that's not healthy.
Yes, yes, yes. I think that's a very good point. So they live together. Dad dies. Son kills himself.
The next day.
But if it wasn't the next day, it was the day after
and
that.
And he shoots himself in the head?
Yes. You do it in the foot and you only limp. Yeah. You want to kill yourself.
You
this is
right
the way to do it.
Sometimes
yeah.
it's in the mouth. I guess that's your head too.
Yeah, I would never do that though. I think you might live through that. I went right through the temples.
Yeah, whatever I do it, I actually would go with the firing squad. I feel like I could convince my buddies.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like if I gave them $1,500 and tell them to come by the house and tell them I was
Ray
set
and
on
Chris?
The $1,000 for Ray.
To shoot you.
If I told him this is what I've chosen and I don't want to mess up and, you know, be doing AM radio going, you know, sounding like Quasimodo, I think they would help me out. They're buds. They're bros.
You know, I'm that guy for my whole family because everybody knows I'll do it. I'm the guy that if they get so sick, I'm supposed to put an end to it. Because they all know that I would do it.
Kabarkaducci.
And now they're all like nervous because now they're setting standards to when I should do it. I don't want to just have a cold and have you come over here and kill me, Danny.
Yeah.
I got to be really sick.
I would do it though. And Danny, I'll go ahead and throw you in the squad, the firing squad.
No
Jack Silver's new nickname around the office, by the way, the firing squad. I would, I'd give one of the guys a pellet gun, though, just so that I would tell him one of you is going to be using a pellet gun so you can sleep at night.
Well, that person would know because the real firing squad, somebody has a blank.
Danny, I haven't worked out all the details yet, but
you give some guy a blank so everybody
you give
somebody
the
can
guy
sleep
blank.
At night.
That's
point is,
right.
Your great uncle offed himself in their home.
That's right, and my grandmother. And grandfather promptly moved into the house. And again, we're not talking about these guys killing themselves and this guy killing himself in the basement or on the third floor where no one ever went. We're talking about one bathroom, one bedroom, 900 square foot little ranch shack in the middle of North Hollywood. So there's no part of the house
right.
that you couldn't be in where you wouldn't see the room the guy killed himself in. And as a matter of fact, she told me, yeah, that's where we put grandpa's desk.
Oh.
Yeah, it's nice. So, and I said, now, my grandmother's an atheist, and she's 93, and she has no interest in God or the hereafter or any of that, which I admire, because there's a lot of angry 22-year-old atheists, but as you get a little closer to meeting your maker, most people would like to admit there is a maker.
To me.
Right. To me. She couldn't give a rat's ass about that, and when I said to her, well, you didn't find that weird? No. I said, well, then what happened? Well, we sold the house and moved. I said, did you tell that to them? No. I said, I think you have to do that. Well, why would you? I said, why would you? Because a lot of people would be freaked out by that. How come? So, Grandma, you're an atheist, and you're very pragmatic, and you have a combination of Ensure and ice water running through your veins.
Right.
But most people with heartbeats, most human beings, would be a little weirded out by this. Well, maybe you're right, but we didn't have to do anything about it. And as I now, you know, look at some of these stories, like the JonBenet Ramsey house,
right.
$2 million plus house selling for half that, all these stories about the real estate market dropping out on the houses, the infamous houses where the infamous murders took place, I understand it. And I don't know. I mean, you guys tell me. If you had a chance to buy a $2 million house for $1.5 million, but somebody took himself out in that house, or are there degrees? You know, someone dies of natural causes, an elderly couple lived in the house. No big deal?
I think that's okay.
No big deal. But I'll tell you, if I could get a $2 million house for $1 million, they could kill somebody in it the next day.
Uh-huh.
And I'd still be okay if I was, say, a
million
dollars.
The corpse would have to live in the house for 1 year
no,
with
they
you
say, listen, part of the deal is the second you sign we're going to kill a guy in your new living room, I'd go, all right, that's cool.
We're going to tape it to a raft and float it in the pool until seagulls get to it.
Then I'm fine with that. That's cool.
I think there's a heebie-jeebie factor.
I have that, too. But then there are scenarios. Like, you know, the whole family was trotted up to the master bedroom where the madman
in cold blood.
Yes. Right. Duct taped their hands and raped the mother in front of the. There's a certain point where I would have to say, I don't think I'm going to buy this house at any price.
The Sharon Tate house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which does not exist. It was plowed to the ground.
after they couldn't sell it.
It was raised because they could never sell that.
Yeah, and that was a beautiful house overlooking a beautiful skyline and view of Los Angeles and all that kind of stuff. Yes, the sheriff, when something is macabre and grisly took place in a house, could you do it? And then, well, let's say it was bulldozed. Does that really help? I mean, you know, when Indians are talking about sacred land, they're not talking about the teepee.
Right. I'm with you on that. I think it would help some because you wouldn't be. I mean, everything would help some. Planting would help some. Mm-hmm. New carpet would help some. Mm-hmm. And burning the house to the ground would help some. But there's a grisly line with me that I couldn't cross. If a guy killed himself in the house, I could live in that house, no sweat. But at anything that would give you visuals of sadness and horror and that kind of thing, I don't think I could do that.
All right. So, Teresa, you said you had a family member.
I got suicides on both sides. Which do you want to hear, dad's side or mom's side?
Which one's the glorious that makes the best radio?
Well, yes. On my grandfather.
Or which one might you cry about?
Mm. Which makes the best radio.
Thank you. Good point.
My grandfather was one of five. They were Hungarian, kind of a hot-blooded people, and two of his five siblings shot themselves in the head.
Wow.
Two of five.
Before what age?
They were both young. They were both in their 30s. I think my Uncle Marty was, he was in the nut house for a while, the veterans nut house over here. Every now and then when we drive by, my dad goes, there's the nut house your Uncle Marty was in.
You mean the one in Westwood, the veterans?
The veterans, yeah.
That's where my grandmother worked for 40 years.
She probably saw.
She was in charge.
Probably why he killed himself.
Yeah, she knew him as pecan number seven.
Yeah, exactly. And then my Aunt Rose on that side, but they were actually great aunt and uncle. And then my
Rose
mom.
Rose and Marty. Not big suicide name.
No, they seem so happy.
Yeah.
But not so much.
Did it with the gun. She did it with the gun,
too. Which is unusual for a woman. They don't usually shoot themselves in the head, they say, because women are vain and they don't want to go out ugly.
Well, statistically speaking, suicide itself is odd because not that many people really do it. The fact that she did it with a gun, really weird for a girl. Super weird for a girl.
So you got that going for
you.
And
then my mom's sister is a closer relative. She suffocated herself with a plastic bag. That's fun morning radio, but you know, it's true.
That's a hard how do you hold it on tight enough?
I think everything and a lot of these things involve getting boozed up.
You gotta get wasted
and then the bag needs to go on.
Zumbot people or whatever, Haley's Comet people.
Yes.
Remember it's
dyed in their Nikes.
Hale-bop. Yeah, all dyed at the towels over them and stuff. What they did was they took a bunch of drugs to put them to sleep with bags.
She was stone cold sober and they found this book near her and it was, I think it was called Final Exit or something. It described
how to do it
the best way. Yeah. Oh. There's a right and a wrong way. You can take the wrong combination of pills or you can, I think, jumping off a building is, you know,
unpleasant. She did it with a bag sober?
Plastic bag, yeah.
Wow.
Well, that just reminded me. So I was going to tell you the story of my wife's aunt who, her uncle rather, who hung himself in the basement and the wife found him, just walked in and found her husband hanging there. But I completely forgot about this because nobody believes it was suicide. They think it was a terrible, tragic accident. My wife's actual mom fell out the hospital window 5 minutes after giving birth to her little sister on the 11th floor.
What?
Was she having a smoke and blowing it out the window?
What was she doing? She was on an army-based hospital in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes, because I was real skeptical, I just assumed she killed herself and nobody wanted to tell my wife.
Right.
Because
right.
How do you, like in America, you don't just get up after giving birth, say, let me hold my baby, they take the baby to wash it off, and you fall out a window. That just doesn't happen.
Right.
But they don't have the same kind of standards in other countries that we do, because I investigated it, and it really looks like she actually got up on this wrong combination of sedatives and fell out the 11th story window to her death.
Well, that'd be surreal seeing somebody, for the guy on the sidewalk, to see the chick with the hospital gown dragging the IV cart and falling
to this day. Down. It happens more often than you would think. We'll be watching a movie, and you just know a guy's about to go out the window. And I watch my wife look down, and I think, please don't show a guy fall to his death. And then they do, and she gets all moody.
Was she upset about the Eric Clapton situation that the song is about?
No. Didn't bother her. 4-year-old boy fell out the window to his death. That one didn't bother her a bit.
She was fine with it.
Scott?
Yes?
You say they don't have this disclosure law in Nevada.
No, they don't.
No, because everybody kills themselves in Nevada.
One more reason to move out to Nevada.
I put my mortgage on black.
Sorry.
So you do real estate in Nevada?
No, I don't. Actually, I bought a house, and when I moved in, the neighbors came up to me, and they started telling me how the guy had shot himself in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so I contacted my real estate agent because I want to know if we could get out. And they said, no, you don't have to disclose that, only in California, not in Nevada.
Oh.
Wow. Did you did you feel freaked out by it then?
No, it happened on Christmas Eve 3 years ago. So his anniversary of death just happened. So we just kind of, nothing freaky happened in the house, and we don't even think about it. We actually make a joke about it.
Oh, that's nice and morbid. He shot himself in the kitchen.
On Christmas Eve.
Hold on.
This may not have been suicide. Was my wife cooking? Because there have been times I've said, I will fall on this steak knife, so help me God. I have to swallow another mouthful of this.
There was blood on the ceiling. There was blood on the ceiling. When I finally found out where it was, I was, redoing the house, and I looked, and there was little spots of blood on the ceiling.
So he literally blew his head off into the ceiling.
The cops came in. Real fast. The cops, they come in because he was depressed from his family. So they called the cops because they hadn't seen him for 2 weeks, knocked on the door. They made their way into the house. He said, come in. When the cops are there, he shot himself like right in front of everybody.
Yeah, the committing suicide thing is bad enough, but doing it where the loved one, discovers you swinging, over the rafters or whatever.
Impressive.
The one that I find weird, and this is just one of my sort of life weirdness ones too, in general, is the guy who shot John Lennon, is it Hinckley? Chapman. Yeah. I get Chapman and Hinckley mixed up all the time. John Hinckley. Thank you. I had to go
Get
to the hard drive.
You have to go out on weekends now, right?
Chapman, yes.
Yeah.
Chapman was living in Hawaii, despondent, obviously had emotional problems, and decides one day, many years before he eventually shoots John Lennon, or probably at least 5-6 years before he shoots John Lennon, I'm going to commit suicide. I'm going to end it all. I'm in too much pain. Drives his car to the beach in Hawaii, pulls up around dawn to watch the sun come up, takes some sedatives, does the thing with the garden hose to the exhaust pipe, and begins to kill himself. Would have been dead, was half dead, if not some surf fisherman, good Samaritan, at least at the time, finds him, pulls him out of the car, drags him to the hospital. He gets a new lease on life, works at the hospital, then moves to New York and kills John Lennon a year later. So the guy who kills you was dead if it wasn't for this guy who went surf fishing at 5 a.m. on Hawaii.
Oh, sweet irony.
I would find, if I was Yoko, I would find that fisherman and kick the holy snot out of him.
See, if I was Yoko, I'd just find that fisherman and then just stay around him. Because that's punishment enough. I'm stuck with Yoko Ono.
I'm going to sing another ditty for my best of album. Holy Christ, now I'm going to kill myself. Somebody partied in a house where there was a murder, Craig?
Yeah. Oh, man, we used to hang out at this girl's house, and what we found out later is her cousin, actually, and his friend killed his parents in this house.
Mm.
Like, for insurance money.
Sure.
They plotted it, sat in the kitchen, waited for the parents to come home, and when they came home from, like, vacation or something, they blew them away in the living room.
Pulled them in Inez.
Yeah.
On their ass. And sorry, the connection's bad, so I'm going to put you on hold. I always think about the Menendez thing, and the reason I want those guys let out of jail, and the reason I know the dad was a horrible guy and the mom must have been horrible, too, is because if at any point my two twins, in somewhere in their early 20s and late teens, if my son turns to my daughter and says, my 19-year-old son turns to my 19-year-old daughter and says, I'm thinking about grabbing a shotgun, heading into the master bedroom and blowing Pop's Corolla's head off. And my daughter goes, when? I think it's safe to say I did a fairly bad job of parenting.
So basically what you're saying is you had it coming and that they should be free.
And both your kids decide it'd be a great idea to blow your head off with a shotgun while you watch MacGyver
and eat ice cream
with the old lady, nature or nurture, you did something wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. We will take ourselves a break. I'm sure my kids will be playing this tape back in 20 years in court.
Absolutely.
Pops gave me a thumbs up. You must let us go.
My wife has a tape of me on Oprah saying, my wife pulled me out of the gutter. If we ever got a divorce, I wouldn't ask for anything because she made me capable of working. She can have it all.
There she's you got go. That piece of tape. My kids will play that as a little tip of the hat right after they play this tape. When we come back, as is custom here, the new person has to sing their karaoke song. Our own Danny Bonaducci has crafted his, and we'll hear the velvety tones of Danny Bonaducci doing his Get to Know Yourself karaoke song after this on The Adam Carolla Show.
Welcome back to The Adam Carolla Show. And now our newest cast member, Danny Bonaducci, introduces himself through the magic of karaoke. Here's Adam on The Adam Carolla Show.
Well, cool your jets just 1 second there, Bonaducci, because I just want to clean up the phone lines here.
All right. Good. That'll give me time to think.
Yes, we have.
I didn't know I was introducing myself.
I would normally just move on to the karaoke introduce yourself song, but I see Ken here had a guy jump off a bridge to kill himself and laying next to him. Wow. And then Nick on his cell phone had to clean out a car after a guy offed himself in it. Let's go with Nick first. Nick.
Yes.
What happened?
You called just in time.
Okay, I detailed cars. Got lady brought in a truck that her dad owned, shot himself with a shotgun in the face. And I basically had to clean up chunks of skull, brain. And the blood that comes out of your brain is a lot different than if you cut yourself.
Really?
What's it like?
Yeah, it's like mixed with sugar. I don't know. It's really
funny. So you had to clean this guy's brain off the headliner of the Ford F-250?
The seat. We had to rip the floor carpeting out.
But don't you get some sort of bump, some sort of hazardous duty bump or perk or something for doing that?
No.
Because there's companies that do that.
Yeah.
There's people whose job it is to clean up after murder scenes that aren't cops.
And they were selling it, too. So.
What kind of truck was it?
It was an old Chevy pickup with a shell on the back.
Well, sorry to hear that.
A shell in the chamber.
Yes.
Yeah, there was hair on the windshield and everything.
See, that's a bad sign if you go to buy a car and there's hair on the windshield.
Yeah.
That's an issue for me right there.
Yeah, I would have just torched it. I really would have told her, just go ahead and hammer the insurance check. I'm going to torch this baby. Last one, Ken.
Hey, what's up, Adam?
Guy jumped off a bridge.
Yeah, pretty crazy, man. This is, it happened actually last summer, and it was an overpass that's in front of the baseball stadium, Bank One Ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually contracted by the Diamondbacks, and I drove in through the players' entrance, and there's a guy on the bridge, some cops around and stuff. It was a really crazy experience, though, because I wasn't prepared for all this, obviously, and it was the whole scene with people on the ground telling him jump. You know, they're like going jump and
What is that?
It's the worst impulse.
It's something I haven't seen in a while, but it was a sort of one of those bad, along with the Indian crying by the side of the road. It was one of those 70s things where somebody was on some skyscraper in New York and a crowd gathered yelling jump. Do they really want to see that? I wouldn't want to see that.
See, it's all a sham.
You didn't want to see it after you saw it. But, you know, I was down. I was actually on the ground, and I was looking at the guy, telling him, do not jump. And I was trying to take umbrage with these cats, like, just shut up.
Right.
He almost got muscled into doing it, by the way, because it looked like he was just trying to get some attention or something like that. And, you know, you
peer pressure.
Whatever, somebody told
you to jump off that bridge.
Yeah, he's one of those people that looked at their mom and said, yes, I would.
So it was just you, the Diamondbacks infield, and a bunch of cops from Phoenix yelling jump.
Yeah.
And like the security guys from the organization are saying, go for it. And the dude jumped, and he literally landed 10 feet away from me.
What was that like?
Horrible. You know, and like I talked to your screener, and I said, he doesn't haunt me, but I still see him every once in a while. And he landed feet first, and it was
well, it's all bad. Is there a part of your body you could land on first that we'd go, okay.
You know what I found the most interesting out of the story, which was fascinating from beginning to end? The fact that he said, I was unprepared for this.
Yeah.
Who is prepared, like, right now?
Listen, when I go
to have a body just fall through the ceiling and die right next to it.
Danny, I don't want to correct you, but when I go to the ballpark,
Yeah. I'm emotionally prepared to have a body land next
to me
on the way.
Catch it.
That's what I do. Yes, they're called souvenirs, Danny. I know you're not a sports guy.
No, sorry, I stand corrected. I thought you just waved those weird sticks that made noise.
Yeah. Who else has got some stories? Well, I'll tell you who's got some stories and is going to express it through the majesty of song. Our own Danny Bonaducci.
I'm expressing my inner anguish to the majesty of song.
Thank you for that redundant drop. Yes.
In my defense, before I even start, that I didn't know that this was introduce yourself karaoke. I just thought it was karaoke you made up to sing. It's more about you guys than it is about me, really.
Well, the bar is incredibly low. You should know Teresa Strasser did her own some months back.
I've been living in Corolla's world. I used to work for TLC, doing home makeovers half-assedly.
Yeah,
that was me. Now I'm the new news girl.
Oh, that rocks. Comparatively speaking, you're like the new kids on the block.
Timely reference. Yeah. All right, Danny, let's get this over with.
Okay, you're going to have to tell me when the words start, and then I didn't write it down or anything.
Is
I'm just going by memory.
More of a roast than an introduction?
No, okay. not really. I don't think.
But I do cry. Danny.
Brian will give you the cue. Let's hear it.
I hear that train coming. It's coming round the bend. I needed the job so friggin' bad, I took it my rear end. Now I'm stuck here with Corolla, till I don't know when.
Friday, over under Friday.
I hope it's a life sentence, but only from 6 until 10.
Right, we don't need to hang out after the show.
Got an inmate named Teresa. She's got a pretty face. There must be something wrong with her, because she can't get laid on my space. And I'm stuck here with Corolla.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I'm getting tired.
You don't have to dance there.
Please.
I look on the bright side. I'm not that sports guy that got fired.
Oh, great Dave Damage. Yeah.
We miss you, Dave.
I'm not done yet. Uh-oh. Hang on. I met a man named Jack, whose promises were hollow. I thought he was talking money when he said I could have all the silver I could swallow. Now I'm stuck here with Corolla.
Oh.
I don't know when. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Solid, solid effort.
You
sold yourself very
short. Do you know, like, nothing rhymes with any of your friggin' names?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Strasser.
The only one I could get that actually worked out was the promises were hollow with all the silver I could swallow.
That was good. MySpace and Face was nice.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it had been somewhere in the right time zone of when that actually happened.
I can promise me heaven.
Oh.
Put me
this is Adam.
Come on, Jack.
No, this is Leo, the film freak. In Jack Silver.
Everybody!
I was going to say reliving their childhood, but for Jack, it's his mid-40s when this song came out. Uh-oh. All right, that's enough. That's enough. Where were we? Come on. We're off precariously perched here as it is. Where were we? T.
Yes.
What's coming up in the news, baby doll?
Well, some people play Trivial Pursuit as a drinking game, and it goes very, very badly.
Mm.
I'll tell you about that, and also who Allen Iverson is angry at.
Next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Live, local, late breaking. Teresa Strasser with the news that matters.
A woman was taking a flight out of Washington, D.C. Apparently, she had terrible gas.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now. The Adam Carolla Show.
Said it many times myself, T.
Yes.
What's in the news?
Pat Robertson, the evangelical broadcaster, wants to let you know that the apocalypse is coming. He's made a prediction that there will be a terrorist attack on the United States that will cause a mass killing. It will happen late in 2007. He's not necessarily saying it's going to be nuclear, but it might be something like that.
Mm-hmm. look, I heard some sort of survey where, like, an alarmingly high rate of Americans thought the apocalypse, not the terrorist-driven apocalypse, but the apocalypse was going to happen sometime this year. Whenever I talk to my crazy mother-in-law who thinks the apocalypse is coming now, she always says, turn on the news. But I feel like they've been saying that for 1,000 years.
See, you are having the same conversation I have with my fundamental Christian wife.
Really?
Every day, not every day, but she says, with the fires and volcanoes in the Middle East and blah, 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 I go, right. It's been that. We've been married for 17 years. And for 17 years, we look at the wars and the volcanoes and you say, here it comes. These are all in Revelations, Danny.
Or forget about, just go back and watch some old SNL rerun from the late 70s and watch the news and watch the trouble in the Middle East at the top of the headline on the fake news from 30 years ago.
Yes.
Trouble in the Middle East, everybody. It's the sign of the apocalypse. If that was a goddamn sign of the apocalypse, we would have been dead 3,000 years ago and that would be that, because there's always trouble in the Middle East because it's inhabited by people who live in the Middle East.
There have been less than 50 years of peace in recorded history.
Yes.
All on the entire planet.
Call it the apocalypse, call it the rapture. Pat Robertson says it's coming to the United States in 2007.
That's
a nice way to comfort his parish. Now, in stupider news, you know the game Trivial Pursuit?
Mm-hmm.
I guess some people play it as a drinking game, and if you don't know the answer to a question, you have to drink. This happened to a 21-year-old in Chicago, a young woman named Flourisha Cooper.
Mm.
And she and her friends started playing this game, and if you answered incorrectly, you had to do a shot of E&J brandy or take a hit off a blunt. Which I understand is marijuana.
Oh, marijuana cigarette.
Marijuana cigarette.
Blunt. Uh-huh.
And then apparently Flourisha really didn't know a lot of trivia. And she, instead of having the good sense to turn down the brandy or the reefer, she became dangerously ill, was taken to a hospital for being overly intoxicated. She's still there today, but apparently in good condition, according to the Chicago Sun-Times.
I got to tell you, I don't know why it just popped my head, but if Jeopardy would incorporate a shot of brandy for every losing or winning, however it worked, you work it out, Trebek. Just a shot. Ratings through the roof. Look, the show's been dying on the vine for the last 5-8 years. It's been on since I've been in high school. Let's give it literally a shot in the arm by giving it a shot of peppermint schnapps.
Nice. Yeah.
Could you imagine just by, you know, minute 22, the chick that done 28 shots and had minus $40,000
on it? She had no shirt on. I think it's Delaware.
Trebek, you act like your pimp doesn't stick. I had news for you, Mr. I got the answers written on a card, man. Yeah, Mr. Act like you know everything. You think you're hot snob. Who wouldn't watch that?
You're not even American. You're a Canadian.
You go back to Canada with the rest of your Canuckians.
Who would watch that show?
What is Sweeps Week?
Winner. Totally winner.
It's a winner.
What is the bed is spinning?
Okay, well, last night, Allen Iverson got ejected in his first game against his former team, the 76ers. He's since been traded to the Nuggets. Iverson feels that the ref who ejected him had a personal problem with him and always has had one. Here is Iverson.
I just said it was personal. You know, I thought I got fouled on the play. I said I thought, you know, that he was calling the game personal. And he threw me out. That's him. His fuse real short anyway, so I should have known that I couldn't say anything to him. You know, I feel like he's been personal between me and him ever since I've gotten in the league. And this was a perfect game, you know, for him to try to make me look bad.
You know how I was convinced some months back that none of the L.A. Clippers knew what a Clipper actually was?
Yes.
I'm now thinking that most of the 20-something-year-old black men who are on the Denver Nuggets don't know what a nugget is. I would bet that if I interviewed them, they would think it had something to do with chicken. Or their balls.
One or the other.
I don't know that they would think it had to do with nuggets
of
gold.
Would they know a 76er?
No, the 49ers would be hard-pressed to answer that question, too. I know it's something you do on a girl.
They get the nugget question right, though.
Yes. Well, Matt Damon was taking some questions on Inside the Actor's Studio, and he's currently co-starring with Robert De Niro in The Good Shepherd. And I know a lot of people think that James Lipton is obsequious, but I enjoy it. Let's take a little listen to Matt Damon.
What turns you on?
People who are curious, intellectually curious or creatively curious, like Robert De Niro.
Yeah. What turns you off?
People who aren't intellectually
old blowhards who paint their scalps.
Yeah. Our president.
Wow. Took a little stab there at our president, unexpectedly.
Strategery. Never seen that on Inside the Actor's Studio.
Exactly. Now, AOL and Women's Day did a survey. They surveyed 3,000 married American women, and they found that 36% of them said if they had it to do all over again, they would not marry the guy they married. Another 20% of those women said they aren't really sold on it. If they had it to do over again, they're not sure if they would marry their current husband, which means only 44% of married women are definitely happy with their husbands.
This whole marriage thing, if this was a Vegas game in the form of a table,
right,
you would keep walking.
Absolutely.
You would not, you would go, listen, the house has the advantage here. You're just going to go lose a bunch of money and walk back to your room crying. Like, when you start hearing any statistic that has to do with marriage about the parents that were statistically, you know, divorced, the number of divorced or unhappy or unfaithful or whatever, statistically, it is worse than Keno.
Yeah, because there's, the losing is much more devastating to at least somebody. If my wife were to leave me, I would fall into a heap and not move for a year. I'd just lay there and cry and not know what to do with myself. I left my wife, she'd go, huh, that's a bummer. And she'd move about her life within 2 seconds, unfazed.
I would fall into the exact same heap if by falling into a heap you mean drinking and nailing 20-something-year-olds.
Well, heap is the name of a hooker.
Watching 40 Hours of TV from a name. Yes, if you're talking about Cheryl Heap, I would fall into that heap, too.
You may be interested to know that this same survey found 76% of married women admit that they fantasize about a man who's not their husband. That means the likelihood is that your wives have at one point fantasized about men that are not you.
That's all my wife fantasizes about.
Yeah. Now my wife tells me.
Anybody that's not me.
Saint Nick. She fantasizes about Santa.
Really?
Which I don't mind because he's a mythical character. That's right.
My wife thinks about Burl Ives.
Listen, I don't want to know.
Gentiles are weird.
Nobody wants to know what their spouse is really thinking about, male or female, because I guarantee it's not about you. Thus, the fantasy. Look, when you fantasize about your fantasy car, is it the car you just got out of and drove back from work in? No, fantasy means I can't drive, I can't hump, I can't eat. Fantasy, whatever, fill in the fantasy blank. You don't fantasize about donuts if you work at a donut shop and you get to eat as many as you want. Thus, a new form of confession.
Can I tell you from experience, never make the car comparison when you're explaining your attraction to other women. They just hate it.
And,
just because I drive a Ferrari, honey, doesn't mean I don't want to drive a Mercedes every now and again.
I'll put a finer point on that. Don't use Isuzu. Never. Do not use the Daihatsu charade in regards to your wife when you're doing the fantasy car scenario.
I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news.
Nice.
You, CNN.
Job T. When we come back, we'd like your input as usual, 866-901-ADAM. I saw a story on CNN this morning very early about a Good Samaritan who saw a kid have a seizure, fall onto the tracks in New York in the subway. Have you guys heard about this? Tried to jump in after the kid with the train coming only seconds away. Couldn't pull the kid's body off the track, so he dove on the kid, and the two trains passed over him without making contact with him or the kid. Sometimes they turn out nice, sometimes they don't. I thwarted a purse snatching and got nothing but abuse in return. I'll tell you that story, and we'd like to hear your own next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to The Adam Carolla Show. Here's what not to watch on TV tonight. At 6 p.m. on Comedy Central, Shrimp on the Barbie. Something is fishy as an American tourist is romanced by an Australian millionaire. Starring Cheech Marin. At 7 on KDOC, make sure you miss Charlie's Angels. The Angels rescue a disco roller skating queen who turns out to be a kidnapped heiress. And finally at 9 on Sci-Fi, don't watch Route 666. A pair of federal agents are attacked by the ghosts of a massacred chain gang while driving on a desert highway. Starring Lou Diamond Phillips. That's what not to watch. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
We'll be watching the Charlie's Angels episode, but other than that, that idea dawned on me when I was looking through the guide a year or so ago, and I saw Daughter of McLeod on, like, the Oxygen. Right. Famous crime-fighting Daughter of McLeod riding around on a horse stopping crime.
Who was that guy that was in Blue Lagoon with Brooke Shields? Christopher...
Aiken Atkins?
Whenever I'm going through the guide, the second I see that guy's name, I know, don't stop.
I don't care what it is, just don't stop
at the Blue Lagoon guy.
Yeah, he had a couple movies back then. Let's talk about being a good Samaritan for just one moment. We have your phone calls here lined up, 866-901-ADAM. I don't know how this came up. Oh, it came up when Mike Lynch, one of our writers here, actually our only writer here, he said that he called somebody for swerving, called 911 to rat out a drunk driver, which I initially, I'm such a weirdo, I didn't like him for doing that. I thought that was a puss move. I don't think I would ever do that. On the other hand, if the guy's swerving and could kill somebody, then he deserves to be pulled off the road. Yes.
You stopped a purse snatching.
Yeah, my Good Samaritan story, and tune out if you've heard it before, because I have told it before, was...
Don't tell the audience to tune out.
Go ahead. I was in Iberia. I was living in Santa Monica in a rent-controlled apartment in on 14th Street, and my ex-stripper girlfriend had just moved out a couple weeks earlier. I'd really pretty much bottomed out. You know, you've bottomed out when you're an adult, you've been out on your own for a long time, you have $725 a month rent to make, and that's way too much, and you have to take a roommate in. The chick you were living with in one bedroom moved out, and you must pull in a stranger to inhabit the next bedroom so that you can make ends meet. Well, it was that time, no roommate, but past the time my girlfriend moved out. I was coming home from the market. I'd walked to the market. I think I was wearing slippers, which is a bad sign. And I'd walked to the market, and I just walked up the stairs and was on the landing of my very small, like, 6-7-unit apartment building in Santa Monica. It was about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and I heard a young woman's voice from the street screaming, "Oh, God, no, no, he's got my purse, oh, please, somebody," whatever, and I just threw my groceries down and just went running down the stairs and running down this sort of tight corridor because there was a high hedge on the right and the apartment building was on the left. I could only see about 10-foot patch of sidewalk, and I saw this woman, and I just ran out there, and it was a super hot blonde chick who was like 26, young, hot, blonde, and she's nice. she's like, "Yeah, that's what you're hoping for."
You're the knight in shining armor.
Right. She pointed down the sidewalk and said, "This guy, he took my purse, you know," and he was a young black man. I know. You don't think black in crime, because everyone in prison is Asian or Jewish, but this guy was the one black guy that was a felon, and he was taking this purse, and he was hauling ass down the sidewalk, and I did my racial math. I'm wearing flip-flops.
Right.
I ran a 5 or 5.140 in high school, which is not fast enough to get me to the next level. I'm never going to catch this guy. He's probably beaked up on speed, and he's brought his kids, and I'm not going to, but I'll give chase, and that way it'll look good.
Right.
I started chasing the guy down the sidewalk, and I was gaining on him, much to my chagrin.
Right,
I was
sure.
Like, I don't want to catch this guy. Now, for me, it wasn't that I didn't want to catch him because I was scared of the confrontation or being injured by him. I was scared about the emotional part where I'm supposed to hold this guy in a headlock while he screams bloody murder and tries to scratch my corneas out with his fingernails. that have been dipped in fecal matter for 20 minutes until the cops show up over this bitch's purse. But I gave chase anyway. And he had his buddy, who was in a beat-up RX-7, who was his accomplice, who kept trying to swing in to get him to jump into the car. But I was so close to him that he would keep pulling out and dipping in and swinging in, but they couldn't manage it, and eventually his buddy just took off in the RX-7, and right as I was getting close enough to the guy to actually put my hands on him, he threw the purse and I think briefcase that he had of this woman, and when that happened, I just gave up the chase and stopped. Well, I started collecting the things and working the stuff out. He hightailed it down the street and jumped in the RX-7. She was sort of trailing the play like a slow white referee when a guy takes it to the house. She caught up to me, and I turned around, and I said, well, he's gone, but at least we got your purse and your briefcase. And she looked around, and she went, I don't see my wallet. I don't see my handbook here or my purse here, whatever. I said, I'm sure it's around here somewhere. She said, oh, I just went to the ATM, and I took out $200. And God damn it. She was going nuts over her handbook at that point or whatever the hell. What's a chick wallet called? What's a wallet called for a chick?
Purse?
A wallet?
Pocketbook.
It was
handbag?
The wallet. It was not the bag, but the chick wallet.
Yeah, it's a wallet.
It's a wallet? Yeah. All right, so...
coin purse?
She couldn't figure out. Well, another
That's
good
another
name for you, baby. So couldn't find it, and was going and just, oh, I knew it. And she was like, she didn't say thanks once. She was just PO'd about that. And people started gathering and coming out to the street, and everyone filed out. And eventually she reaches down into like the gutter and pulls it out and says, I found it. It's here. And everyone sort of cheers. She looked at it as she retrieved it at that point because it was 8 feet away from where I got the guy to drop the goddamn purse. She picked it up. Now she had found it. Everyone cheered. Then eventually the cops came around, and it turned into one of those things where what happened? This guy snatched a purse, so we all came out. Right, everything turned into we started chasing him down the street, and we found that we. Meanwhile, she got brought in, like, come on, honey, have a cup of tea, come in. I know you're shaking. And I'm just standing out there trying to get some credit from this hot chick when I'm newly single and the stripper girlfriend moves out of my apartment. And she lives in the apartment building next to mine.
What more do you have to do?
I know. So
there's a level of impressing chicks that you have certainly reached, and this chick was just unobtainable.
I slink home, go back, leave the crowd. Everyone's telling they're sort of weaving their tales about how we thwarted the crime. And I go back to my apartment, and I think, all right, now this chick was hot, and she owes me. And I live in a 6-unit building, and she knows my apartment because I came running out of that apartment. It happened right in front of my apartment. I should come home tomorrow and find some sort of note on the mailbox to whom it may concern, to the knight in shining armor who, if you reside in this building, please call me at, but she would do 555 if it was a movie, and it would be distracting.
Sure.
So I sat around for the next week looking out, standing around out front, wearing the same slippers, thinking maybe she would recognize that. Nope, not a goddamn word. Not an attempt, not anything. And people go, oh, she was upset. Oh, she was whatever. All right, but what about the next day?
Yeah, no, I don't care. I am with you completely. She should have made an effort, at least, even if she was unimpressed, to say, oh, my hero, just to be cool to her fellow man.
Yes,
that's what you did. You wanted to do. You wanted to be the hero, and you were the hero. And even if she didn't want a hero, she should have recognized it, put in a little note, and say, "You are just a white horse, shy of the perfect knight in shining armor," some such romantic crap.
Right,
and be done with it.
And
but she owed you.
And how about just a little? I didn't even need any sympathy sex, but what about the less talked about sympathy oral sex? She made no attempt. Again, she knew exactly where I lived, or at least I was one of the people who lived in this 6-unit building. Probably could have done the math, knew it wasn't the old couple in 1A, and so on and so forth. Made no effort, never saw her again, and that's when I decided to quit caring.
Is that when you gave up caring?
That was the very moment.
That's when I gave up caring. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. Sorry, I didn't hear any of your stories, but, you know, I'm in love with the sound of my own voice, and we, after all, are running late. We'll be back to wrap up with a little something called What Have We Learned
after this. All right, well, not much time left, but just enough time. I miss that old Joe Jackson stuff. Just enough time to do a little bit called So What Have We Learned? Well, when you meet a morbidly obese guy on Craigslist who's trying to rape you with a jicama, best not to tell the new hubby about that guy. Honey, if you're listening, that ever happened to you? Let's keep it on the down low, huh? Don't need to hear about that one. What else have we learned? Well, if I was going to be a highway patrolman, I'd go somewhere where the uniforms are cool. Not these puke brown ones we got out here, these crappy looking ones, but one where I look like somewhere between a drill instructor and a Mountie from the turn of the century. Riding boots and those big crazy pants that flare out. Yeah, tucked into the boot, yelling, "Don't eyeball me, son."
I don't know.
And, of course, my new show that's going to sweep the nation, Drunk Jeopardy, where the contestants do a shot of peppermint schnapps for every question they miss. And that's something we call So What Have We Learned?
Good times.
Well, I want to thank nobody except for Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci for doing a yeoman's type job today. And give my props one more time to the Dave Damashek and the Jimmy Brusca and the Big Tad.
I second that.
And the rest of the crew we sorely miss. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
Hello?
Hi, is Roberto there?